Welcome to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 28, 1996.
From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening. Or good morning, as the case may be, as nighttime races across America. I guess the light races, nighttime does too, right? This is Coast to Coast AM, a conglomeration of unscreened, spontaneous talk radio that radiates roughly from the... Actually, it goes a lot further, but solidly from the Tahitian and Hawaiian Islands in the west, all the way across this great land, to the Caribbean and the U.S. Virgin Islands in the east, south into South America, north, all the way to the pole, and points in between. It's good to be here. I'm Art Bell, and... We're going to let tonight's show, I think, go anywhere you want. I've had an awful lot of politics. I don't know about you. Maybe enough. But, of course, there is a lot going on. The new front runner is Steve Forbes. He has more delegates than any of the other candidates. Bob Dole has more votes, but Steve Forbes has more delegates. South Carolina, a couple days away now. Dole is described as confident going into South Carolina. Buchanan planning another ambush. Alexander would just like to show up again someplace or another. In Arizona, Mr. Forbes spent $40 per vote. Don't you feel flattered down there in Arizona? It costs $40 for you to go and vote for him. Bob Dole says that he's only got $4 million left. Now, this is a real problem. He's now saying he's got a very strong message for America. It's too bad he can't seem to articulate it to Americans. For him, South Carolina would be a must-win. Buchanan will go to South Carolina and appeal to the textile workers there, who have lost a lot of jobs, of course, overseas. Lamar Alexander is in friendly territory for him in the South, and so he's hoping for something better than has been. Now, Jack Kemp and William Bennett were the people taking off after Buchanan yesterday. Subject immigration, Bennett called the plan to stop all legal immigration for 5 years a, quote, get this, stinking, rotten attitude about immigrants. As a child of immigrants, it's hypocritical and ungrateful, end quote, referring to Mr. Buchanan, who is a child indeed of immigrants. Stinking, rotten attitude. And he also said, by the way, that if Buchanan is the nominee, there's going to be a third party. Now, isn't that interesting? If Buchanan is the nominee, there's going to be a third party. The rebel moderates, they could call themselves. The rebel moderates, in other words, if Buchanan takes over, the moderates in the party are going to rebel and go elsewhere. On the other hand, if Mr. Buchanan doesn't get in because the moderates squeeze him out, then there will be a Pat Buchanan third party. Kemp said the Republican Party had better be awfully, awfully careful when it has the possibility of finally reaching out to men and women of color and minority status. And, of course, by that he is referring to Buchanan as well. Buchanan called Bennett a beltway blowhard. A beltway blowhard. And Pat likes the term beltway. And, you know, he should be careful as he slings it, because he's been there all his life, too. He went to school there. So I don't, you know. Anyway, I'm still thinking brokered convention. And I'm still wondering who could come along on a horse and save the Republican Party, if it is to be saved from the current field of candidates. Here's a nice fact. Art, thanks for the entertainment during the night. First night you were on in Minneapolis, I called KSTP and said, you've got to keep this new show. I had never heard of you before that night. And then I don't need to read that, self-serving. He says, primary, several months ago, I faxed you and encouraged you to keep an eye on Forbes. If we can catch the media's attention and his message gets out, he'll go all the way to the White House. Several years ago, Bennett Kemp and Vin Weber formed an organization to promote conservative politics. Though it looks like Forbes is an independent tycoon, I think what happened was that Bennett, Kemp, Weber, and Forbes and others went into the war room, said, okay, guys, which one of us is going to run? They came up with Forbes. Kemp will not jump in the ring with Forbes because they are teammates. I could see Kemp perhaps as his vice president. The Cuba story continues to be interesting. There are now more sanctions that we're going to pile on to Cuba and squeeze their economy a little harder and see if a bearded person pops out. Bring back teenage memories, does it? Now, get this. The pilot who defected to Cuba just before the shootdown, the FBI had to come out today and admit that that pilot had been on their payroll. The FBI payroll had received $6,000, as a matter of fact. This guy is apparently a Cuban agent, right? Who, let me get this straight, belonged to the Brothers to the Rescue, reported to Fidel, and somehow got on our FBI payroll to the tune of $6,000. What's wrong with this picture? I swear, it's tragic, but it is, it's almost funny. Anyway, Brothers to the Rescue, as you know, is headed back this Saturday. And I think the president's going to have to put some airplanes in the area, in the air. It is, it's a pretty strange deal, frankly. Mr. Bell, with regard to the Cuban situation, first of all, I would like to know where this incident actually took place. Both parties are telling different stories. It couldn't be that our government is lying to us, could it? Of the courses of action suggested on last night's program, it is my opinion that A, ignoring the situation is probably the worst thing that could be done. B, sending in F-16 or 15 aircraft is dangerous and or unwarranted. C, sending a military task force to conduct, quote, exercises, end quote, in the area may also be unnecessarily provoking a showdown. There's only one way to handle it. And if I were the president, here's what I do. One, suggest to the brothers that it would be in their best interest to refrain from filing false flight plans and flying over Cuban sovereign territory, and that if they choose to fly into the unfriendly skies, they ought to be ready to suffer the consequences, no matter how extreme they might be by our standards. By executive order, I would have one plane launched into the area of question, an AWACS. Their prime directive would be to monitor the activities on both sides of Cuba's 12-mile limit. If a confrontation were to happen, we would exactly know where it took place. That's reasonable. Three, I would then place a person-to-person, maybe collect call to that bearded cigar-smoking dictator, and advise him that if any of his fighter jocks so much as muss the hair on any of the heads of a pilot in a U.S. aircraft in international airspace, it would be obliged to reduce Havana to the Caribbean's largest parking lot. Well, sir, you were doing okay until you hit the last number three there. I'm not sure the shooting down, much as I think there ought to be a response, I'm not sure the shooting down of one or even two unarmed Cessnas would necessarily justify reducing Havana to a, as you put it, parking lot. I don't know about that. Then there is television. And there is something kind of interesting going on here. 36 television execs are going to the White House tomorrow. All the networks, all the cable, all the broadcast people. And what they're going to do is establish a new ratings system to be used with this V-chip. Now, this is really, really interesting, and I'll tell you why. Hollywood presently rates their movies G, PG, PG-13, R, and X. Hollywood rates about 650 movies every year. Just one TV channel alone broadcasts seven times that every year. Seven times. That's one lone TV station. So I'll tell you what, that's a lot of rating to do. Now, it's already being done in Canada. As a matter of fact, an American TV station up in the state of Washington is also doing it. Now, here's where I see the rub. And they showed how they rated a couple of things which seemed reasonable. Disney's Aladdin, rated as 1,000. That's 1,000. The 1 for general interest, 0 for violence, 0 for language, 0 for sexuality. Had none of that. On the other hand, Baywatch, full of curvaceous eye candy, was rated 2 in the general category, for PG, I guess. Violence was a 2. Language, a 0, means it was pretty clean. Sexuality, a 1, the curvaceous eye candy. Now, the people that are going to do the rating are going to be at the individual TV stations, which is pretty cool in a way, because they can decide about community standards. If you live in a town where your community standards are rather conservative, the local station could rate more things into an area that would not be seen by children, because the V-chip would lock it all out. Now, the broadcasters don't much like this idea. And the only thing I wonder about is, aren't you putting the wolf into the chicken house here? The TV stations, when they rate something as violent or with a lot of sexual content, once the V-chip is in, are going to be destroying their own audience. In other words, a lot of parents will lock out the violence and the sex. One wonders how much TV would actually make it through. But after they rate it, there's an awful lot of sex out there. Maybe not as much. Well, there's a lot of violence, too. So once the parents lock out these shows that are rated beyond a certain point, beyond a 1, say, for a kid, the TV station is going to have its ratings hit the basement floor. In other words, there's going to be an awful lot of pressure on them to leave it as open as possible. That's what they're going to want to do. To make close calls go the easily rated way, so their TV shows will make it into homes. So if we're going to have a rating, it seems to me it ought to be done at an earlier stage. It probably ought to be done at the creation of the program. Then they're going to put a little digital signal on here that responds to the V-chip. And if you have ordered, as a parent, that it be so, that show will not come on the TV. The only thing your little tyke will get is a black void TV screen. No audio. No picture. Boring. So they won't watch it. They won't even be able to receive it. So, I wonder how you feel about that. I have somebody who has written my epitaph, for which I am grateful. And in a moment, I am going to read this person's version of my epitaph to you. And maybe we'll talk about epitaphs a little bit, because this person did a wonderful job on mine. Well, you know, my feeling tonight is that I've had enough politics. I suppose I'll be interested again by Saturday. I don't mind talking about it, but I get to a certain level with politics, and then I want to talk about something else. Saturday, I guess, there'll be another reason to talk about it, but, you know, really, my attitude is the field of candidates out there, it's just not all that interesting. Pat Buchanan, of course, has put a little spice into the whole thing, but I frankly don't think he's going to be the candidate. And I'm not excited about any of the other candidates becoming the nominee. You know, I'm not jumping up and down right now for any of them. So, do you realize how much politics we're going to get? In other words, if we follow it all the way through the primary process, and then we'll get our nominee, that'll be exciting when it occurs. Then, though, there is the general election, and we're going to have to put up with all of that election stuff right up until election day. And then a new controversy will begin. But, I mean, it's really going to be hot and heavy. Between now and election day, there's going to be so much politics. Anyway, here it is. My epitaph. Dateline, it says, Pahrump, Nevada, October 21st of 45. Oh, October 21, 45. He doesn't give me an exact day. Well, no man shall know the day, right? It says, beloved Ether talk show host Art Bell succumbs after all internal pig part organs fail following a brief but futile battle with an Australian rabbit kiwi swine virus and nearly two centuries of chain smoking. A large wake was held for Mr. Talk by his widow, Ramona. Isn't it interesting that even in the future, after nearly 200 years, the female still manages to outlive us? That was in print. The deceased was roasted at a lovely ceremony over Mount Vesuvius, only stopping once every hour to baste the guest of honor. The highlight being sweet and sour Art. His few remaining unswine remains that were not consumed were promptly dipped in beautiful 24-karat gold by one of Art's longtime sponsors, the Gold Rose and Body Parts Company, for only $139.95. The lovely tear-filled event was followed by a 9.8 earthquake in Los Angeles in his honor. Guest eulogists G. Gordon Michael Scallion and Stan Deo, even they are still alive, delivered eulogies filled with heartwarming memories of Art and predictions for his future in the afterlife. Foot-tapping music provided by Cusco and selected songs, Don't Fear the Reaper, in the year 2525 and Eve of Destruction were all performed by Linda Moulton Howe and her 1,200-voice alien choir. Gee, it seems like everybody outlived you. The send-off was attended by thousands of friends and fans, a myriad of aliens, a small tribe of Sasquatch, and 40 immortals, the latter group quickly changing their names and relocating to parts unknown following the ceremony due to the impending threat of a raid by rogue IRS agents after them for several thousand years of unpaid back taxes. The only other incident marring the near-flawless event was the issuance of a new traffic ticket to alien mourners for hovering their craft too close to a fire hydrant. Art's widow, he could have said Art's beautiful widow, Ramona, concluded the ceremony by unveiling a large memorial stone shaped like an ancient AM radio. The stone memorial was engraved with a fitting epitaph to the man that kept us up at night through so many, many, many years. Dear Lord, Art was all talk, but his talk was art. And that's it. And then at the bottom, there's a little asterisk, and it says, You never know, it could happen. Yes, it could. We'll be right back.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 28th, 1996.
Hi, Art. I was just listening to the Los Angeles news. They said they were getting reports of an earthquake. They didn't know where it was located. I just found it on the net. Thought you might like to tell your L.A. listeners where it was located. I would, Ray, if you could tell me. So this is the first I'm getting of that. I will say this, though. Oh, wait a minute. Let's see, where is it? 3.1, so it's not a big one. Not too big. 5 miles northwest of Upland, 2 miles northwest of the Sierra Madre Fault Zone. Well, good. Okay, so we do know where it is. I didn't look down far enough. I have a feeling earthquakes are on the way, folks. Just a feeling, very strong one. And it's backed up by a lot of others. I'm getting a ton of faxes. And if you have been tracing where they have been in the Western Pacific, moving then to South America and Mexico, then it's fairly obvious there's going to be one on the West Coast or on up through Alaska somewhere. And it's coming in the next pretty soon. That doesn't do you a bit of good, I'm sure. The next pretty soon. That's all I can feel. And I do feel there is going to be a pretty soon event. Hey, Art, my vote is for Steve Forbes. He's a kind of 90s Dr. Strangelove, don't you think? I can just see him in a wheelchair smoking a cigarette with the other hand totally out of control. He also has the same wild look in his eye. Can't wait for the first presidential press conference. Forbes is interesting, but I want to hear more of Forbes. In other words, if I hear him talk about the same one paragraph one more time on television, I'm going to throw up. Hope for America, positive message, blah, blah, blah. But you never get any of the details. You get that same little speech, and then, of course, given a second opportunity, immediately throws in the flat tax, and you don't hear any more. It's sort of all he's about. I'm sure he's about more than that, but we're not getting it. Do any of you out there, other than an occasional debate, you don't get any more than the little paragraph Mr. Forbes has. He almost looks like a marionette sometimes when he says it. I'm not entranced with any of these candidates. I think that's what's wrong with me. I do occasionally get excited when a primary occurs, but this last primary just shuffled the cards. You know, the same thing is going on. We'll see. Maybe South Carolina will somehow change it all, but I doubt it. On the first-time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
How you doing?
Fine. How are you?
Fine. Where are you?
I'm in Eugene, Oregon.
KPNW.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Eugene, I got a question for you.
Is that right?
What is the time of your book signing at the Oregon Convention Center?
High noon. 12 o'clock.
Okay. And it's March 16th, right?
Correctamundo.
Oh, wonderful. Okay, thanks, Art.
All right, you're welcome.
Bye.
It's going to be interesting because I'm doing the show Friday night, Saturday. So we'll do the show Friday night, Saturday, get on an airplane Saturday morning and go up and do a book signing all day. And then I suppose by late night, they will pour me into bed. There's not going to be a lot of time. I will take that Sunday's Dreamland and do a repeat. But I'll tell you know, we've got years and years now of programs of wonderful Dreamland shows worthy of repeating that so many of you have never heard. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Art.
Yes.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, sir.
Oh, it's great to talk to you.
Where are you?
I'm in Columbia, Missouri.
Columbia, all right.
KFRU.
Yes, sir.
Yes, the first time I heard you was the morning of the Oklahoma City bombings.
That was a rough one.
You were live with KFRU when you were on the air. And it's the first time I heard you, and I've been listening to you now for some time.
That was a very hard show.
Yes.
Very hard.
You know, I've heard several times Simon and Mark referring to the morning. We've heard Art Bell in many different states on KFRU, but the most intense was when that was going on.
Well, events dictate, and I've had a lot of intense shows. I mean, you've got to admit, this has been an intense time in America.
Yeah.
All the way around.
And where's it going, you know?
Yes, I do. I'm sorry to say, yes, I do. The whole thing, as you know, I believe to be quickening, and there's all kinds of evidence of that. Where's it all going? It's quickening, but where is it really all going? I don't know. It's going to a different place. There is going to be a change. I can't tell you what it'll be.
Well, I have a hope. I have a hope for the future, and it kind of goes with what we all listen to you talking about every night. And this is the first time I've been able to get through, so I'm really happy about that. We've talked about the presidential or Republican primary for many, many nights. And
All of a sudden, I'm tired. I'm tired of it.
Well, you know, I want to cast a positive reinforcement for Steve Forbes. He started off low and now he's big, but I've always been a follower of Forbes. And I'm 25, and I mean, what he's wanting to do with Social Security and what he's wanting to do with, he's an outsider, and he makes me excited. I'm scared of Buchanan.
You're right. I mean, Forbes does talk about Social Security, changing the system, all the rest of it, but I feel when I listen to Mr. Forbes that I'm listening to such a packaged presentation. Do you know
preset.
What I beg your pardon?
Preset.
Yeah, almost like a video loop. You know, you're saying the same thing over and over. That's not a slam. It's the way he comes across.
Yeah. But isn't he the best of the Republicans? I mean, if we want to get Clinton out of the air, isn't he the best hope?
I don't know. Maybe.
I mean, Alexander, what has he got to say? I mean, I look at him as a country performer, country singer. I mean, Buchanan, we can't trust him. Dole is, I mean, you've heard all the negatives against Dole. Forbes is the most positive. I mean, Colin Powell doesn't want to run. Forbes is the outsider.
Yeah, I guess. But it's kind of like reaching into a basket of fruit and selecting the one piece of fruit that's only about half rotten. Thank you very much for the call, sir. I'm sorry, I don't mean to sound so down about it, but it is a little bit that way. I really sort of don't like the field. There, I've said it. I don't like the field of candidates. I don't specifically actively dislike any of them. They all have their points, but none of them to me stand out as a heartthrob. Does that make sense to you? Nobody starts my heart beating faster. I don't quite embrace anybody, and I'm not quite pleased with the field. And I've been thinking about that, and so then maybe something will happen. Maybe there will be a brokered convention. And Mr. Right, for America, that is, will walk in. Who knows? Some days, who cares? A wild card line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello from a dry but cold KABC.
Yes, sir. Well, at least they're dry.
Hey, Art, when you had your guest on, what was that, last Friday?
Yes.
And you were talking about the credibility of the NOVA program.
Oh, yes.
That tape, you know, predictable disaster on earthquakes. That's the one that got sent to you that is about earthquakes?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
That was NOVA program?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'd just like to point out one thing. They do have a tendency, I noticed, on especially that program, like other regular TV commercial programs, to edit out things that don't support their point. And I'll illustrate it this way. I mentioned this to you before, but I ran out of time when I was talking to you. the Four Seasons apartment house building that collapsed during the Anchorage earthquake, I was there with my dad when he was taking photographs of the surrounding building. What they didn't point out, they took a nice aerial photograph of that thing flying around in a helicopter, but they didn't show the hospital right across the street that did not collapse. In fact, they didn't have to tear it down.
Hmm.
And, I mean, this is, you know, I'll write to you about this, but there's a point to this that there's a lot of these buildings built after 1955 under what they call the ultimate system of design that are more probable to fail than the ones built prior to that.
Okay, well, listen, we'll leave it there, and that was a very, very good piece, and I did enjoy it. And they did point out, though, that when they look at Los Angeles or they look at San Francisco, they see a very great number of buildings that would absolutely come down. There's no question about that. And it's almost as though I can see, and I've said this before, I can see the Senate hearings in my head now that will occur, all the hand-wringing and all the heads that are going to go on the chopping block about why we weren't ready, why it was such a disaster, why so many buildings fell down, what we're going to do to prevent it from occurring in the future. I mean, I could almost, like a movie reel, run those Senate hearings in my head right now before any event occurs. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yes, I was wondering if you wouldn't mind if I deviated from the usual topics of politics, aliens, and fresh-cut flowers to talk about something a little different.
Anything you want.
Okay, I'm a bit of a film buff.
Okay.
And I was just wondering what you thought of the actor Bela Lugosi.
Well, gosh, he's been around forever.
You don't have any more input. I thought you'd be...
Bela Lugosi. Well, I've seen him in many movies, so what kind of input do you want?
What would you think about him as a movie critic?
I beg your pardon? As a movie critic?
Yes.
Bela Lugosi was an actor.
Would you rate him on a high level or low level? Or?
I wouldn't at all. Well, probably a high level in terms of his acting ability.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. That was strange. Bela Lugosi, high in terms of acting ability. But I'm not exactly sure where he was trying to go with that. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. It's Elizabeth from Vancouver.
Well, there's a voice. Well, you're not a first time caller.
Oh, my gosh. Did I hit the wrong button?
You did.
Oh, I'll try it on another line.
All right. Thank you, dear. That line, I guess I ought to give out the numbers. Before we may be confused this morning. The first time caller line, for those that have never called before, is area code 702-727-1222. The wild card lines, for those that have called before and want to call again, area code 702-727-1295. Let them ring until we answer. West of the Rockies, it's 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies, it's 1-800-825-5033. Did you get all that? West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Art.
Hi.
I have my radio off in just 1 second. Hold on.
All right. Stretch. Get that radio.
Got it. Okay.
Oh, good. Where are you?
I'm in Upland, California. That's about an hour out of Los Angeles.
Okay.
We didn't feel an earthquake here tonight. 3.1 is kind of small, though.
It is, yes.
But someday, after listening to your show and hearing others, we're maybe waiting for Upland, California to become beachfront property someday. So I'm hoping my property values will go back up here.
Either that or Upland will be part of the new ocean floor.
It could be. Art, I wrote a book called The Official Clinton Bashing Limerick Book, and I'd like to send you a copy.
The Official Clinton Bashing Book, huh? Well, every single president we've had has been bashed without mercy. And that includes Bush. I did some of that on my own, thank you. And Reagan, beloved Ronald Reagan. I really loved Ronald Reagan. But people bashed him with no mercy whatsoever. Matter of fact, they even do now. It's let up a little bit since he's there's public knowledge of his illness. But, man, they just bashed Ronald Reagan without mercy. Then there's Jimmy Carter, who pretty much deserved it and is a much better ex-president than he was a president. Actually, Jimmy Carter's a pretty good ex-president, as they go. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
How are you doing?
Well, all right.
I have a couple questions for you.
Like what?
Well, the first one is the one thing I've noticed is that I wonder if there's really been a non-establishment Republican candidate since about 1964. I realize you don't want to talk about politics tonight.
Well, no, I will. A non-establishment candidate?
Right.
Do you think of Buchanan as establishment?
He's a pundit. I mean, he's been in bed with all these people since Nixon. I mean, yeah, he's an insurgent, but, you know?
Well, I suppose you could stretch it there. Buchanan kind of hurts your argument a little bit. He is really the exception. The other ones, Dole, Alexander, even Forbes, in his own sort of way, are very much on the inside. And Buchanan is, as you say, an insurgent.
Because, I mean, at some point, I think there's going to be some kind of political fault line in both parties between the masses and the people who purport to represent them.
I think you're wrong. Thank you very much for the call, but I think you're wrong, and I will explain myself. You don't see any of these fringe candidates. I mean, even though Buchanan is, compared to what's there right now, a little fringy, the real fringe candidates have not caught on. And if there was going to be this great quake, political quake, this great political awakening, and we would reach out and grab somebody from two or three levels under the current pack and raise him up as America's hero and savior, I just don't see the American electorate doing that, obviously. And what you're talking about would require they would do that, suddenly get fed up and reach out and get somebody like that. Or just tear the establishment down. They're not really doing that. All right. How would you construct the perfect political candidate? Now, here I am talking about politics. He'd have the fire and conviction and plain-spoken ability of Pat Buchanan. He'd have the conservative, calm wisdom of the William Bennett. He'd have the money of Steve Forbes, so he wouldn't have to use any public money. He'd have the tempered, easygoing nature of Lamar Alexander, wouldn't he? Now, the only thing I don't... I guess he would have the barbed wit of Bob Dole. I was trying to figure out what it was we could take from Bob Dole, and that's as hard as understanding why he's running for president. God, that's mean. But the barbed wit of Bob Dole, I think, works just fine. He does have that. Bob Dole actually has a very dry, funny sense of humor. If you let him go, I'm kind of getting to the point where I would like to interview Bob Dole, just to give him the time to relax, sit on the phone at home somewhere, and kind of get into a good discussion on radio. Not just a short appearance, but a good deep discussion. Wouldn't that be fun? Well, I would hope it would be.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More Somewhere in Time coming up. Networks presents Art Bell Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 28, 1996.
Isn't this nice? Good morning, everybody. Good to be here. It is now morning. And as I told the audience last hour, though we did cover a lot of it, I'm kind of getting tired of politics again. I don't know why. The current field is kind of, Here's somebody apparently agreeing. Art, strap all the candidates down, extract a bit of DNA from all of them, combine all the samples together, add a smidgen of frog DNA to fill in the many blanks, add a safety so the end result cannot breed on its own, and send the matured biopolitical animal to San Diego. That's pretty good, Stephen. I'm going to save that one. Shades o' dinosaurs, huh? And this, hey Art, on CNN tonight, they had a segment on about this Cuban issue. Seems that Cuba says, and here's our answer, I told you so, their airspace extends up to the 24th parallel. Now that's 12 to 15 miles north of the 12-mile international limit. I cannot see how there's not going to be a confrontation. Are they also reported on how the Cuban exiles went down in their boats last year? Their boats were rammed by Cuban boats. No one was killed, but a few people hurt. I think that Clinton ought to send air and sea forces to ensure the Cuban exiles do not stray into Cuban waters and to protect if Cuba decides to attack these people. Bert in Houston. Saturday is likely to be a very event-filled day, folks. So don't fade away when Saturday comes. There's going to be the primary. There'll be the primary, and then there'll be this. The Cuban crisis will be back on page one. And then this response. Somebody last hour sent a fact saying that if they do attack us, we should level Havana and turn it into a parking lot. And so here's a response. I thought that was a little radical. Reducing Havana to a parking lot seems somewhat extreme. Perhaps the Jewish Christian Islam admonition of sevenfold is a reasonable retaliation, seven planes and 28 lives. Two, if you wonder why you get all these pointless faxes, it's partly because we get a chance to see if our fax programs will send properly. Well, thank you for that. Dear Art on the V-chip, what happens if I remove it myself? Will I be subject to prosecution? I can hear it now. Man arrested for repairing his own TV. Film at 11. Long live the UFC. DJ in Phoenix. This is from Texas Bob. Dear Art, I hope this message, as ever, finds you and your family healthy, wealthy. It doesn't say wealthy. Healthy. Rorschach test. And with peace of mind. Oh, by the way, did you see the Rorschach test they did for the political candidates? Here I go again, but it was pretty funny, really. They did it for Forbes, and everybody said, money, 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 money. In other words, respond with one word. And for Bob Dole, they came up with old and too old. And for Pat Buchanan, naturally the extremist, right-winger, extreme right-winger, that sort of thing. Lamar Alexander, they came up with nice guy. Good guy, that kind of thing. So that was the political role. CNN was running that. It was kind of interesting. Would you respond roughly the same way? I suspect most people would. So what we need is sort of a mixture of all of these candidates' best qualities. And when I got to Bob Dole, I was thinking real hard. I got stuck for a minute. But he does have a good quality. He's got a wonderful, truly a wonderful, dry sense of humor. And I still would like to interview Bob Dole. Just to do what I haven't seen anybody else do. I haven't seen him do it on Meet the Press. I haven't seen him do it on Brinkley. Or any other show. Or any CNN interview show. You know, they're always so stiff. It's like you never get to know the man. And a long radio interview would give you an opportunity to get to know the man. Wouldn't that be cool to have Bob Dole? I would think it would be. Either that or it would be horrible. I don't know which. But, see, I believe there really is something to him. It's just the public, somehow, he can't translate it to the public, not on TV. So I'll tell you, if you're in the Dole headquarters somewhere out there, have him get in touch with me or my network, and I'll put him on the air. And if he's got the time, we'll explore the real Bob Dole. And I'm willing to do that with the other, even Forbes. Look at Forbes. It's like watching a marionette. The guy has a good message. But he repeats it incessantly. endlessly. Surely there must be more to Steve Forbes than the roughly one paragraph you see him say again and again, ad nauseum. There's got to be more to the guy. So I'd like to interview him. I know there's more to Pat Buchanan. I've interviewed Pat extensively, and would again. You know, he's a real personality, no question about it. Lamar Alexander, he's a mystery. He's a nice guy. I don't know anything else. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah. Hey, Mr. Bell, this is Todd from Portland. Talked to you before. I love your show. I love everything about it.
Thank you.
You wanted to get off the subject of politics a bit, which
suits
I can't blame you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, I got a buddy who was out looking outside. He is seeing a UFO in Portland right now as we speak.
Are you kidding?
No, I'm not.
He is seeing a UFO right now. Let us all be calm.
Okay.
Before any of you run outside, where is this UFO?
Okay, it's about 30 to 40 degrees from the horizon in the western sky below the moon. When he first saw it, he noticed it as a line, not a planet shape. He has a telescope he's looking at. He's saying it's rotating, and as it's a triangular shape, a two-dimensional triangular shape, as it kind of like the rings of Saturn, as you know, Saturn changes. It looks like rings, or it looks like a line.
Sure, this isn't Jupiter.
No, it's not Jupiter.
Jupiter's at varying degrees in the western sky. You know.
Is okay. What's happening is he's getting multicolors. I don't know what color Jupiter is right now.
Well, when you stand and watch it, it looks like it's changing color.
Okay, could Jupiter appear triangular at one point? And then
it should not, no.
Okay, and then up and down straight line at another point.
It should not, no.
Okay, so, well, everybody that's in Portland, Southwest Washington, probably not Eugene and Salem, they're kind of cloudy right now, but go on outside if they can handle the 50-mile-an-hour east winds.
What? You're having 50-mile-an-hour winds?
Oh, yeah, Portland, yeah, East County, Multnomah County, Portland, Oregon, we get the east wind all the time. People say, oh, 30-mile-an-hour wind, it's windy. Heck, we get 60-mile-an-hour winds out here all the time.
Really?
But, yeah, if anybody's brave enough to go out there, I was in my underwear looking at it, and sure enough, it was anomalous.
You were in your underwear in 50-mile-an-hour winds?
Yeah, well, we're pretty manly out here, you know, up in the Northwest. We can handle this. It rains on us, colds on us. We can handle it.
All right, sir. Well, we'll send everybody out then. And we'll get some reports from the Portland area. The mental picture of him and his boxers flapping in the breeze, looking to the west, jaw dropped open, observing a UFO, and sort of leaning into the wind to do it. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
I can't believe I'm on the air. I'm an absolute fan of your show.
Well, thank you. Where are you?
I'm up in Canada, actually, Vancouver, British Columbia.
We're hoping one of these days actually be on the air in Vancouver.
14 CFUN, right?
Now, how did you know that?
I'm the one trying to get you on the air. I've been phoning them and phoning them and phoning them and bugging them and bugging them. I sent you email.
Yes, you did. That's right.
You got my email?
Not only did I get it, but I passed it on to the network.
Awesome. Hey, I haven't received a reply, though. Do you replies or what?
Well, that's an interesting subject. Not always. You've got to understand, I'm getting 150 to 200 pieces of regular snail mail a day.
Right.
I'm getting more than that in email, and it's not humanly possible.
Yeah.
I respond to the important stuff, and when I can. But, you know, with hundreds of pieces a day, it's really grown out of my control.
Right. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I'm also a ham radio nut.
Very good.
Yeah, my call sign is V.
No, don't give it.
Oh,
That'll give people your address.
Oh, yeah.
But you're a VE7. Yeah, I'm sure you are.
Right on. Oh, boy. I'm just suddenly on the air here. I've been dialing for so long, and I just can't remember what I wanted to say. Have you got a date or something on maybe one you might be on the air up here in Vancouver or what?
No, I have no such date. I know the talks are underway, so.
Right.
All I can say is, keep politely talking to them.
Right. Did you also receive my email with a whole list of different stations that might be acceptable?
I did, and I passed that one on as well.
Right, okay.
Everything of that nature I get, we send up to affiliate relations, Julian Hudson and Company.
Is that how it works?
Yes.
Oh, very good.
Sure. They're the guys who are talking to station. So makes sense. They would have it.
Right.
Okay.
Well, I really, really like your show there, Art.
Thank you, my friend. And
another thing is you should talk to your Bob Crane at C-Crane and get him to make something that will, it's just like a phone, except it will keep dialing the number over and over again like a modem is when it's
busy. They're called devil dialers, sir.
Yeah. Do they sell them or anything?
Of course.
C-Crane sells those?
Yes, but you have to be licensed to have one.
Oh, is that right?
No, I'm kidding you. Of course, they have devil dialers. Thank you very much for the call. West of the Rockies, you are on the air.
Yeah, Art?
Yes, sir.
I'd like to talk to you about that the tethered satellite that got loose.
Yes.
And I got a little bit of an idea that what might happen on it. From what I understand, I heard that that was an Italian satellite.
Really?
Well, yeah, it was like some company in Italy or something had wanted this experiment to be done, and so they contacted NASA to do it.
Uh-huh.
And so being as that's it, maybe there's a possibility that the government released it, let it go, and said that it broke loose because, by chance, maybe this experiment may bring up, may show some evidence of possibly maybe what HARP is doing up there.
I'm not able quite to connect the Italian part to the HARP part.
Well, they wouldn't want other countries to know what they're doing, very possibly.
Well,
it's possible.
Look, anything's possible. I mean, who knows? But I'm trying to connect all you said there, and I'm not quite making it.
Well,
that's all right. I mean, your theory is as good as anybody else's.
But I do want to say one more thing.
Yes.
You know, on the nanotechnology.
Yes.
I heard that show, and it was excellent. And I remember a gentleman asked him later on in the show, asked him if, you know, how far have they advanced on this? And I was watching a deal on PBS, a show called Stuff of Dreams.
Yes.
This was, back several months ago, about 8 months ago.
Right.
And on it, they were showing that these guys used one of these electron microscopes, and they picked up separate atoms, and made two stacks of atoms.
Yes.
One, I think, was like silver, and the other one was copper or something, and they were like about 20 atoms apart from each other.
Yes.
And they stacked them up, and what they noticed several days later when they looked at it again is that one stack had gotten smaller and the other one larger.
Oh, now that, thank you very much. That is interesting. Not exactly sure what it means, but it's interesting. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, how you doing today?
Okay, sir.
What was this?
I beg your pardon?
I think I had the wrong number.
Oh. The wrong number. I don't get a lot of wrong numbers here. That's interesting. I bet he turned up his radio after he after he heard that. He said, oh, my God, I was on. I said, I had the wrong number. Wild card line, you're on the air.
Is this Art?
It is.
Yes, Art. I'd like to say I was listening to you the other day about not the other day but about a couple months ago about you were talking about using the power of our minds to maybe eliminate some of these dictators and this and that.
You want to go after Castro?
No, I'm just saying that if we all powered our minds together and went after Castro, the problem is that I think that those people already are super sorcerers in every part of this society.
Do you know
what I would like to do?
Sir, before you go any further, let me tell you something. Maybe you know something about this. I opened a piece of mail earlier today.
Yes.
And I was cursed.
Why?
I opened it, and a piece of paper simply said, this is a curse on you. And there were bits of hair and ashes in there.
Oh, well, part of my relatives are from New Orleans. That might have been, like, from the down in the voodoo people and this and that.
You know what? I didn't notice the postmark, but I should have.
Mm.
So I've been cursed.
Well, no, all I'm saying is that I think that It would be awful hard for us to all say tonight that we could put our minds together and then tomorrow Castro wake up dead.
How do you know? Until we try such a thing, how do you know?
We really don't know, and we really could do it, except that it would be, would you accept the responsibility of that we just eliminated a dictator by doing that?
Yeah,
I mean, would you wake up in the morning feeling good that we did it? Is all that I'm saying.
Well, yeah, I could do it.
Okay, well, one other thing then. I would like to say that we could do it.
In other words, I believe in the death penalty, all right?
Okay.
And
well,
Castro, not just now, but throughout his career, has murdered again and again and again and again and again. So could I direct that kind of energy toward him if I got in the mood? Yeah, I could.
Well, what I'm saying is there's a better way to hit him.
How?
Like, it's evident that Castro or any of those dictators like that are over there or any of the dictators would say that incest is best. He's got complete control over any women or girls or anything that's there. I mean, he's got to be completely retarded. And I would say that if we spoke up this way and said what's going on there right now, we could absolutely destroy him.
All right. Well, look, first of all, I think that your reference to his being a dictator and a wild man with women and all the rest of it, that there's not very much to stand behind that. I don't think, as a general rule, Castro has run an immoral leader to his people. Well, of course he really has, because he has murdered people. But in terms of what he has tried to do for his people, he is making a sincerely misdirected communist effort. And I don't know that he's the kind of demon that you portrayed him to be, sexually fostering incest and all the rest of it. I don't think I've heard that of Castro. However, he has certainly murdered, and a good recent example are the four people who were shot down in those aircraft. It's murder. Murder. So could I direct energy, if I thought it would work, towards snapping a little blood vessel in the bearded one's forehead? Well, yeah, I could do that. Could I sleep at night after I did it? Yeah, I think so. Does that shock you? First time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, I'm calling from Portland, Oregon.
Yes, sir.
How are you this evening?
I'm fine. Did you go outside to see if there was a UFO hanging there?
No, I didn't. I've seen UFOs in and around the Portland area before.
So no big deal. If one's out there, it's no big deal.
Yeah, you know, I've seen photographs of areas around Forest Grove where they had as many as 30 or 40 UFOs in the sky.
Well, I must say we're getting very blasé when notification of UFO in the sky is given. People don't go out and take a look.
Well, you know, there's the old propaganda indoctrination routine that goes on
just
a lot of people
UFO.
About UFOs.
Yes, it's true. Anyway, you must have called for some other reason.
Oh, yes, I did.
Mm-hmm.
I got a couple of things. This flat tax that Steve Forbes is supposedly talking about.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the way he's got it written, or way I've heard about it earlier today, was that it protects capital gains, investments,
that's
and
right.
retirement income.
Yep, yep, yep.
So, you know, it's the working people that are going to pay the taxes that earn wages.
Well, I like the idea of a flat tax. However, in order to be revenue neutral, which means the government still receives as much money as it was the year before,
uh-huh.
the flat tax has to get its money somewhere. And
yes,
if you look across the spectrum, it would arguably reduce taxes greatly on the rich, those who derive their income from interest or investments. And then they say it would give the little guy a big break. So if you still have to be revenue neutral, then it's got to go to the middle, which is where the money is, to get the money. And that seems logical to me. And
now we get to the point.
Yes?
The flat tax is sound and good in its own right, but there's even another tax that's even better than the flat tax.
Consumption.
Where everybody pays.
That would be consumption, right?
Right, sales tax. And, sales tax,
yes, sir.
Anywhere from 8 to 10%.
No, I understand, and I'm leaning a little that way myself. That would mean that those who spend, those who consume, support those who, to a lesser degree, do not. And it would be interesting to know what percentage you would need on everything sold in order to make that one revenue neutral, and what that would do to inflation. A lot of good questions. We'll be back, I think.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time.
This bumper. That's why I did it going out, did it, do it again, come back in again. Oh, that was redundant. Anyway, I started to read or give you a little bit of a Texas Bob facts here a little while ago. He said, my breath was taken away by the recent Origins of Man broadcast. I had to tape it in order to listen to your Sunday evening show. And finally found time to watch it. And he thought it was absolutely amazing. Proof of the quickening. Perhaps a natural process just now coming back. The image, he says, of our stable Earth being solid and anchored in place was completely shattered when at the end of the broadcast, Mother Earth was demonstrated to be a sphere of stratified jello. And apparently... yeah, I know. I had the same exact reaction, Bob. Somehow you don't want to think of yourself as... A crusty little piece of earth on top, resting on top of what is virtually jello. Then this. Art, this story, if it were not true, would be a joke, but it is not. It happened. CNN had George Bush on the other night. Yes, they did. To defend, among other things, the bombing of that supposed baby milk factory during the Gulf War in Iran, he explained they had photos and proof that the factory was really a chemical weapons factory. His counterpart, a CNN reporter who was in Iran during the war, said that Bush was wrong and he had proof. This reporter said that he went to the bombed-out factory the next day and was given a plastic package of baby milk as proof. But, in addition, he had even more damaging proof. It seems that on the devastated floor of the factory, the reporter picked up a work apron. This reporter picked up the apron and took it back with him to the U.S. The work apron, which the reporter held up in front of CNN's TV cameras that night, had the words Baby Milk Factory across the breast area of this bib. He claimed that he was convinced this apron was once worn by a now-dead factory worker. Don't you get it yet, Art? That's right. It had the words, Baby Milk Factory, on this apron, spelled in English. Who does this reporter think we are? Does he think I'm going to believe that an Iranian baby milk factory would, a factory worker would wear a bib with English on it? Does this reporter have a clue, or does he just report what he's told to? Now that's objective media coverage. See you in Portland, Bob listening to KEX. That's an awfully good point. And then this, hi Art. The Portland UDO is NASA's, UFO I suppose, is NASA's lost satellite. I heard a news report that it would be quite visible this week, with people able to see both the satellite and the broken tether trailing behind it. And it's up there right now, rotating out of control. And that brings up a little bit deeper probe into that subject. And I want to challenge some of you to think about the following. Hey, Art, have you noticed that NASA is not telling us what really happened to the cable attached to the satellite? If there is no atmosphere in space, then there shouldn't have been any resistance from the satellites being towed. Therefore, the cable would not just snap. Why do the astronauts keep talking about not being scared? If the cable did snap, as they claim it did, would have floated away from them, not being of any concern. So why did fear become an issue? Did something hit the cable? You know, NASA tapes everything they say and do. They had the astronauts watching the cable and the satellite through a video camera. So, why only video of the frayed cable attached to the shuttle and the satellite drifting away? I want to know where the video is of the satellite when the cable broke. Oh, right on, sir. Why are the astronauts talking about no time to be afraid because they had much to do to compensate for losing the satellite? Well, maybe they're talking about at the moment it broke. If the cable broke from resistance, all they would have to do is wave bye-bye. Something fishy is going on here. He makes a good point. Number one, there is not supposed to be friction in space. Remember the old expression, nobody can hear you scream because there is no air, hence no friction, and that's how, or at least so small an amount of friction that, this guy is right. Something's fishy. And if there was a lot of friction and a lot of tug and pull, oh, well, there just should not have been. And we should have seen it. They're absolutely right. One place they would focus a camera would be on the juncture to the vehicle the astronauts were in. That would be a natural place to keep a camera. Why have we not actually seen it break? And what was it breaking from? It is all quite strange, isn't it? Wild Card Line, you're on the air.
Oh, how you doing, Art?
Okay.
Gerhard, Oakland, California.
Yes?
We used to call Reagan the Great Communicator. I got a good name for Clinton.
Yes?
The Great Prevaricator.
Prevaricator.
You know,
Well, he is great. I mean, it's undeniable. He does that very well, better than anybody else, and that's why he's president.
But, you know, he was elected with 43%, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And since then, he has only taken hits below the waterline, like NAFTA, like GATT, Somalia, Haiti, Bosnia, on and on and on. I mean, he is really damaged goods. I think that anybody could take him out. But it would be the most fun to see Pat Buchanan do it, to see those two in a debate. You know, Pat has had many, many years of experience of sitting across the table from...
Oh, I know. People just like Bill Clinton.
from hysterical, high-decibel level liberals and just tearing them to shreds.
I know.
You know, it would be... I mean, I would love to see him do it, but hey, I don't care who does it.
All right, my friend, thank you. It would be entertaining. You know, you've got to give it that. If somehow, and it would take a miracle, I believe, for Pat Buchanan to be nominated, I don't think he's going to be the nominee. Sorry, I know that disturbs a lot of Buchanan people out there, but I don't believe it. I have not believed it since the beginning. And I maintain that belief now. But should he be, the caller is, of course, correct. It would be quite a show. Quite a show. Buchanan has dealt with people just like Clinton all his career. And he'd go after Clinton tooth and nail. I really think one big mistake that Pat Buchanan made was dressing up in the little big man costume yesterday or the day before down in Arizona. I mean, he was all dressed up in black, looked like black leather. He had a Texas million-gallon hat on. He was wearing a gun, low slung, like gunfighter. He looked like little big man in his gunfighter stage. And I don't think that went over real well. For Arizona, I suspect that went over about as Dukakis did in a tank, bobbing up and down. God, that was a funny picture. On the Wild Card Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning to you.
Well, I'm sure enjoying my select antenna.
Well, we know. You've told us about four times, but I'm glad to always hear it.
Well, I'm sitting here listening to WOAI, and I got to turn the volume down. It's so loud.
In San Antonio.
But the interesting thing about this Licht antenna is that it works like a crystal ball. I can see all kinds of things as a result of getting it.
Well, I think you're getting unexpected radiation from it, Leonard.
What do you think of this?
Yes.
A battle is raging.
A battle.
It is not a question of right against left or conservative against liberal.
It is good versus evil.
Or Democrat against Republican or white against black.
I'm just guessing.
Poor.
Yes.
It is a question of right against wrong.
I knew it.
Of good against evil.
Mm-hmm.
Of hate against love.
Yes.
Of sin against righteousness.
Yes. Okay, Leonard, we get the idea. Which side is winning?
Which side is winning?
Yes.
Well, it's going to look like the Antichrist is winning until Christ comes back, and then you know what?
Now, this is like asking for a political spot survey. I mean, at the moment, which side is winning? That's fair question.
Numerically, as far as human beings are concerned, Satan is winning.
Really? All right. Thank you, Leonard. So the devil is winning. What do you think the score is, folks? Is it halftime? Or is it past halftime? Is it like 31-3 in the third quarter? The devil? Or have we not yet reached halftime? If there is a battle, as Leonard suggests there is, what do you think the score is right now? We'll be right back. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Eric from Bellingham, Washington.
Hello, Eric.
Hello. I'm just curious why. I wonder why NASA isn't recovering the $400 million satellite.
Well, I can give you the official explanation.
Well, the fuel.
That's right.
Well, if they can afford to be up there for a couple more days to, you know, do whatever they're doing.
Well, no,
why
no,
can't
no,
they
that...
afford to go and recover $400 million?
Well, because of fuel. Now, it would require fuel to go on rendezvous, and it would be, they say, somewhat dangerous. And to just stay up there for a couple of more days in free orbit does not require fuel, but maneuvering does.
Yeah, of course.
Well, then that's your answer. If they were to use the fuel to go after that satellite, they might be go below their margin of safety to do a correct reentry.
Their reentry window and all, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, makes sense, but it's expensive.
Well, there are a lot of mysteries about this that I don't understand. What could possibly cause that to snap if there is no friction in space?
And no weight, of course, to cause any stress on the line. Yeah.
Then what could possibly snap something like that? I mean, that was not exactly a kite string tether. Was it?
No.
That was a real thick, real strong tether, and you would think that if there was that kind of friction, that the shuttle itself would have been literally pulled along, possibly even out of orbit.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
what would it...
Something's rotten in outer space, sir.
Yeah.
I appreciate your call, thank you. Now, there may be something obvious that I'm missing here. But I don't get any of it. I mean, I get that they could string a satellite out on a very long tether, and they would almost, in order to bring it taut, seems to me they'd almost have to move away from it. Or set the satellite, when they released it, in a slightly lower orbit, so that eventually there would be tension. There would be a delta, a difference between the two orbits, and that would, unnaturally, take it out. So what in the world, and then too, if it was strong enough that it would actually snap that tether, and I saw it was a pretty thick tether, wouldn't that have jerked the shuttle a capsule literally out of orbit or sent it tumbling? Wouldn't that kind of force have affected them in some a very major way? It is quite a mystery, actually. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello?
Hello. Art, I'm calling from Washington State.
Yes.
And, you know, lots of us don't even have touchstone phones, much less those computers so that we can see you and your cats. And I wondered if you'd tell me what you look like.
What do you think that I look like? Since you have not seen me, right?
Right.
What do you think that I look like?
I think you look like a young Steve Allen.
Really? that's interesting. I don't know that I do. You're not really far off, but I hesitate to describe myself because.
Are you handsome?
Of course.
I don't know. I'm going to lose my job for staying up all night listening to you.
I'm no Steve Forbes. I'll put it that way.
Oh no, not Steve Forbes. Allen.
No, I don't. I can't describe myself. I'm about 6 feet tall, probably weigh about 200 pounds, maybe 195, something like that.
Okay, well, you sure sound good. Are you still smoking?
Yeah.
Me too.
Are you too?
Oh, God.
I stopped for a week, and I wore the patch.
You were real bitchy, too.
I was. I was real bitchy, and I felt weird, and then when I finally decided I can't go through this anymore, and I took the patch off, then I wanted a cigarette again. I'm just laying the truth on you here.
I know. It sucks.
it does. And, I still shake my head every time I see that videotape of the tobacco company execs sitting up there saying, oh, no. No. Nicotine is not addictive.
Right. Yeah, well, I guess right. I'm going to have to drive to Portland to see you then, huh? If I want to find out what you look like really, huh? Or buy your book.
I would recommend both, actually. you'll find out when you get my book what I look like, for sure.
Right. The gold inscribed autograph.
Right. That's right. I would love to see you in Portland. Thank you. Love to see you in Portland, where I will be signing books faithfully on March 16th. It is a Saturday. And we'll be there about noontime. That's a kind of an about time. You know, I mean, it might get started a little earlier, but basically based on airplanes and that kind of thing, it'd be about noon. Now, if you would like my book, he says as he reaches for the information, I wrote a book which I consider to be a very good book. It is my legacy, as opposed to my epitaph, which I have here. I should read that one more time tonight. It's really funny. But I have written a book that summarizes my very weird, bizarre life. It also summarizes a lot of years behind the microphone, and I talked a lot about things that I can't talk about on the air. And I talked about a whole lot of very personal things. That's all in my book. And if you order now, and I'm told now we are two-thirds of the way through the special edition. That didn't last long, did it? If you order my hardcover edition of The Art of Talk, or the audio version, which I did myself, I thought about that really hard, and then I thought, man, can I go through all this again? And I did, so there is now an audio version. If you order either one, you get the 5x7 glossy photograph of me standing upon my porch, and you get to see my desert. I like the photo. And I signed it in a gold pen, as a lady said. And that goes free of charge with an order of either my regular hardcover book or the audio tape. But it's going to be exhausted soon. So you need to call and, you know, take the plunge. East of the Great Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, this is Ralph in Middle Tennessee.
Hi, Ralph.
How are you?
Fine.
Just wanted to point out that it is early on February 29th, and this is the day that Honorable Secretary Rubin had said that he could not go beyond.
You're exactly right.
And I was wondering if you'd heard anything about it. I didn't see anything at all today on the news about it.
Perhaps the Honorable Secretary Rubin has determined that being February 29th, it is, of course, the leap year day, and this is the day that time will stop. He doesn't have to worry about it. I have no idea otherwise. You are correct. It is the day, the official day. So we'll have to see what happens.
Maybe some of your other listeners have heard anything about it.
Maybe he's found some more pension funds somewhere, you know.
I did notice yesterday on CNN that they said that, they just reiterated basically what Andrew Gold had said about that the Republicans were going to be sending in the bill and that it had so many stipulations that nobody knew what he was going to do with it.
Yeah.
But that was last I heard. God, you would think as big a deal as it is that we'd hear something about it. I kind of lay it back to I'm more mad at the media, not for what they tell us, but what they don't tell us by omission.
It's true. You'd think you'd feel tonight like one of Henry VIII's wives waiting for the blade to fall.
Exactly.
I appreciate your call, sir.
Thank you, and have a wonderful evening.
Thank you. You too. Tennessee, way across the country. God, talk radio's a blast. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. There's more. Stay right there.
The trip back in time continues with Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM. More somewhere in time coming up. Somewhere in time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 28th, 1996.
Once again, here I am. There's somebody on Vidian right now that typed me out a message watching me on Vidian. And it's somebody named Christian. He says, Art, I am an alien and I eat humans. Now I know what you look like. I've got to regard that last sentence as a threat in view of the first. Well, it's been that kind of day. I opened up a letter earlier today and out rolled some human or animal hair with ashes and a little piece of paper that says, I have been cursed, so I've got a curse on me tonight. For all I know, for all the rest of my life. And we're having a very strange conversation about all kinds of very strange things, including why the satellite snapped at the end of the shuttle end, actually, the tether. And I've got some faxes on that. It's a very interesting question. And we'll get to all of that in a second. Politics, we're talking about that tonight somehow as little as possible. Dear Art, I've worked closely with NASA and the Caltech Jet Propulsion Lab. My field is orbital mechanics. This is the guy I was looking for. The strain on the satellite tether was expected. The strain comes from the difference in orbital height, slim as it might be. See, that's what my guess was. Therefore, the velocity to maintain orbit is greater for the shuttle as opposed to the satellite. Remember, the further the object is from the center of the Earth's gravity, the less pull gravity has on it. The less pull equates to a slower velocity needed to keep it in orbit. One of the experiments would have tested the ability for raising the shuttle to a higher orbit by passing an electric current through the conducting tether. This current in the tether, which is passing through a magnetic field, in other words, the Earth's magnetic field, would exert a force or a pull on that tether, raising the shuttle to a higher orbit. Obviously, the strain was too much. Sincerely, Dr. Warren, I won't give his last name. And Doctor, that is a good explanation of how the tether had a strain. Now the part that I don't get, Doctor, and you can put this in another fax if you would like. But, Doctor, I saw the tether. That was a pretty big tether, Doctor. That was a very strong tether, Doctor. And the shuttle itself, it seems to me, a couple of things would have happened. In other words, where you've got a reaction, you should have a reaction. Now explain this to me, Doctor. The shuttle, should have been exerting a pull, a force, to maintain its position against the drag that you've described of the satellite. So therefore, when it snapped, it should have had a rubber band kind of effect. The shuttle should have then moved Higher in orbit, I would presume. Yes, higher in orbit. Suddenly, it should have jerked. It should have begun to spin. In other words, the force exerted to actually snap that should have had an effect on the shuttle. I have heard nothing. So, explain that one to me, Doctor. And then this, dear Art, with respect to the question regarding the tethered satellite failure, during deployment of the satellite, dry gas jets are used initially to maintain tension in the tether as it is reeled out. After the satellite reaches a sufficient distance, several hundred meters, gravity gradient differences between the satellite and the shuttle orbiter takes over, resulting in tension in the tether. In addition, the tether tension is maintained within prescribed limits by an active feedback control system located in the tether deployer within the payload bay. This control results in minute reeling out and reeling in of the tether. Hence, the tether is always in tension. Also a very good explanation from Robert in Denver. Thank you. But again, for both of you, explain to me why there was not more of a reaction when the tether broke. There was obviously established then a pretty severe tension because that was a big mama of a tether. So when it broke, there should have been some kind of reaction. If the forces you describe were in place, then when they were instantly released, there certainly should have been some sort of reaction of the shuttle. Am I not right? I think I am. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Well, hi, Art. This is Dennis from Seattle.
Hi, Dennis.
Question for you.
Yes.
Actually a statement. Most planets have a gravity well around them, don't they, that extend out pretty far?
Yes.
Wouldn't the shuttle have been within at least a certain range of this gravity well? And
yes.
And therefore...
Yeah, yes, but it's very minute. Even in relatively low orbit, you've got to actually use a fuel to get back down to re-enter, to go back down to where you will re-enter. I mean, it's a very minute influence.
Right. It just seems to me that there would be, if you know, a satellite's a pretty big thing, and there would be some sort of momentum there that they would have to, you know, the shuttle's moving... The satellite's not, even if there is no friction, it's got to have some sort of a pull to get it to the point where it's
moving.
All right, well,
the two faxes just explain that very well. The part that is not explained is why there was not more of a reaction on the shuttle.
The shuttle itself, why it didn't move up. Yeah, I guess that's unknown. I've noticed you had a lot of calls from Washington.
Yes.
A lot of people... other parts of the country have said that us Washingtonians are rather strange. So I guess it kind of follows suit that we'd be listening to your show. Great show, by the way.
Well, thank you. We're all strange.
Yeah. I've got a friend of mine called you about 2 weeks ago, and just a real quick kernel of information. He was talking about barbarians at the gate and that sort of thing, and you were trying to figure out a movie by that name or a movie that was about
I saw a movie called Barbarians at the Gate. It was about the a leverage takeover of a company.
Yeah, he was talking about the quickening and the barbarians being within and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
James Garner.
Thank you.
You were trying to figure that out at the time. So, and I was standing right next to him. We remembered it after the fact.
It was a good movie, actually.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, but I'm going to have to now.
Oh.
I've got a lot of guys that listen to you at nighttime. I'm part owner of a security company up here, and we're driving around all night long in our patrol cars listening, and I know probably some of them are listening right now. So I just want to say we're all listening, and we enjoy your show nicely.
All right, stay alert out there.
All right, thanks
all
a
right,
lot.
Take care. Art, I just went and looked at the UFO. Somebody called me and said there was a UFO in Portland. It's flickering yellow and reddish and appears stationary. We'll try to get a photo. Well, you know, I think it's probably Jupiter. That's just my guess. Jupiter does that. It blinks. And if you stare at it hard enough, it appears to move around, too. P.S. had a friend over to see you on Vidian. What a kick. Mike in Oregon. Vidian, of course, is a kick. And here's somebody else who's begging me, says, I'll send you $10 if you send me a copy of Vidian. No, there's no charge for the... I'm not going to do that. There's no charge to get Vidian. The demo... When you get it, you load it into your computer as instructed. Yes, read the README. And then you can click, and it'll dial me up, and you'll see me sitting here doing my program. Or you can call C. Crane Company and get a demo there. Live, in color, with sound. It is amazing, over a regular phone line. Or you can go to my World Wide Web page, and I understand it is available there as well. And that would be www.artbell.com. Can you remember that? World Wide Web, www.artbell.com. And for those of you who don't know, you have to put HTTP :// or something like that before it. But whatever it is, it's the same for all of them. So really it's www.artbell.com. No spaces. And you can get it up there too. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi. Hello? Hello, hello, goodbye. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Art Bell. Chuck, Mike, Federal Way, Washington, listening to you on the mighty KOMO.
You bet.
Hey, I've got a question for you about the Vidian first. I know you're on a 7-second delay on the radio, but what about the Vidian? Is that live? Is when you talk, are we hearing something different on the radio than what we're going to see your mouth doing on Vidian?
Well, I'll put it to you this way. Vidian is not censored. In other words, Vidian, I'm feeding the audio to Vidian prior to the censor button. So if I have to push the button and you happen to be online on Vidian, you're going to hear the whole thing.
Okay, I see. Also, the other comment I wanted to make, have you had a chance to see the Nova program yet?
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah, I saw it this morning. I missed your first hour, so I don't know if anybody commented on it, but they definitely tried to cover up a bunch of stuff on that. It was totally amazing the way they made your guest the other night sound like a real quack.
I know. It was a hatchet job.
Yeah,
it was a hatchet job without evidence. Thank you very much. They went after John Mack from Harvard, and my guest Bud Hopkins and John and all those folks went after him tooth and nail, and it was a hatchet job. And the reason I say that is because they offered no scientific proof, and they had an opportunity to do that. I mean, they were going after these guys, and they had an opportunity to do testing. They had a big budget for it, and they didn't do it. Why didn't they do it? That was the unfair part of that program. I mean, they could have gone for MRIs and X-rays and had psychological battery tests done and all kinds of things they could have done to back up their assertion that all of this is some sort of false memory syndrome or mass hypnotic effect. This is Carl Sagan saying that. Whatever it was, they had a grand opportunity to actually do a good exploration of that possibility and have a show with great impact. Instead, they decided to offer a kind of collective opinion without scientific portfolio that it's all baloney. Well, that adds up to hatchet job. Back now to the unknown. On the first time caller line, you're on the air. Hi. Hello, hello.
Hello, Art.
Yes, that's me. Turn your radio off.
Oh.
That's always
very
important.
I thought I had you all figured out.
Nobody has me all figured out.
this is Randy in Omaha.
Yes, Omaha.
Well, I've been listening to you for about 5 years now, and three of them were in Denver, and I caught you from midnight to 5.
Right.
And then I moved to Omaha, and I catch you from 2 to 5.
2 to 5, all right.
And I heard you mention that you're going to pick up Dreamland here.
Omaha is indeed going to pick up Dreamland sometime next month. And and today is 29th, right?
Right.
Leap year 29th. So next month begins tomorrow. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to start tomorrow or this Sunday, but sometime, I forget, during the month, around two-thirds of the way through the month or something, they're going to start carrying Dreamland, yes.
That'll be great.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I think you will enjoy that Third Prophecy movie, though, because they had a little segment on the Philadelphia Experiment.
Now, that is one part I actually saw with Al Bielek.
Yeah.
And, yes, I saw that.
Well, I couldn't remember, because it was in Denver when I listened to you, but the guy that committed suicide in the car, I didn't get
catch that part.
Well, they talked about the guy who committed suicide, and then they said, and there was a report, two men were seen walking away.
Oh, I see. So before I forget, hey, you remember that air purification system you used to do?
Alpine, of course. I have it in my house. I wouldn't be without it.
Well, the thing is, you don't advertise it anymore.
Well, you know, it's funny you should say that, because I think we're about to.
Are you going to start doing it again?
Yeah, it's an amazing. You know, people think it is a filter. It isn't a filter, even though it does do some filtering. That is not the way it achieves what it does. It puts ions into the air.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And
I've
seen it. Listen, I've seen it. It literally drops smoke right out of the air. It's the damnedest thing you ever saw.
Yeah, well, that's why I want to order. See, I've already gotten, I mean, I've followed you for 5 years. I got your Gold Rose. I got a Permac 1 and 2, and I'm going to order the ones. What is that, Mystic 2000?
Well, that's one of them, yes.
Yeah.
Cusco 2000 and Mystic Island, and I think.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Hey, can you tell that I'm on a cordless phone?
No.
You can't.
No, sir.
See, I was wondering that. This is an AT&T phone.
Well, that's a good one. That's rare.
Yeah.
Most of them sound like crap.
And I was going to wait for you to say, could you get on a real phone? But I guess this one's all right.
Well, so far so good. Now, are you walking around?
Yeah. And I'm in the basement, too.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds as good.
Well, I believe in your digital stuff. And this one, you know, I've always heard you say that. My brother's got a cellular.
Well, the problems inherent with what you've got go beyond just the sound. But that one sounds damn good.
Good.
And I will say this. You could still have a neighbor listening to you. You see?
Uh-huh.
Because those 49 megahertz phones transmit the same place the baby monitors transmit, the same place other cordless phones transmit, and they can be heard.
Right.
People with scanners, people with baby monitors.
Hmm. I've got one last question for you real quick.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I know Gordon Michael Scallion just like, you know, you do, and I heard him on TV, I saw him on TV tonight.
Right.
But what's his percentage on his predictions? I never hear anybody say that.
About 87%.
87%?
Yes, sir.
That's pretty good.
Well, it's better than a sharp stick in the eye. Thank you very much for the call. And yeah, that phone sounded very good. Matter of fact, it's very rare. Most 49 megahertz phones really sound lousy. On the first time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi. All right. How are you doing?
Fine. Turn your radio off.
Yes, it's going off right now. I was just so surprised. I was listening to
your
Neutrini commercial there, and all of a sudden, hey, I'm on the air.
That's how it works.
Oh, great. Super. Hey, Art, you know, I was giving you a call here. The other night, some people were calling and talking about Immortals. I didn't know you guys actually talked about this on the show.
Sir, we talk about everything here. Yeah. Yes, we talk about Immortals.
Do you think there are really Immortals?
I think it's possible.
Yeah. Well, you know, there was a guy who called and you kind of cut him off, and he was talking about, like, in the Bible they were talking about immortals, and I've read that too. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
About, I think it was John, one of the apostles, who Jesus said he could live...
Yes, I am familiar with the basic...
Basically forever.
Yes,
if you know anything, Mormonism actually three, they call them Nephites, that were also immortals.
Okay, sir.
Had you heard about that?
Yes, I had. Sir?
Had.
Sir?
Yeah.
Thank you. Can I say something?
You bet. Go ahead.
Whether you look at it from a biblical perspective...
Right.
Or you imagine that on Earth now, there seems to be an exception to anything you can name. Even with AIDS, which is supposed to be 100% fatal, there are prostitutes in Africa immune to AIDS. They have proven this now. So if there's an exception to everything we can think about, then surely there are some humans walking around out there who had a little genetic switch thrown in another direction, however it was done. And they're not aging. Yeah, so it could be. I don't rule it out biblically or scientifically.
Right. Well, scientifically, let's say just from the aspect of scientifically, someone was walking around who was immortal. What would keep them from coming out and saying, I'm an immortal, and going on talk shows and saying, clock me for 200 years and watch, I won't die, barring a train wreck or
the answer to that is the answer to that is simple.
As opposed to biblical.
Sir, the answer to that is simple and obvious.
Uh-huh.
We would grind them up into little immortal juice and test it. They would become an immediate guinea pig locked up until we figured out why, so we could be too.
Well, Well, it would take quite a while before we believed that they were actually immortal.
I know, but if you did a convincing job on proving you were immortal, then that would be your fate. You just know it would be. The scientists would have you in a little room. Best case, worst case, you'd be ground up into little petri dish size.
Oh, I don't think so, Art. I don't think that if you got enough press that based on our system of government, individual rights.
Do you mean is that the same government, the one that fed the plutonium to children?
I'm sorry, whose children?
Our children, sir. Hazel O'Leary's admission that we fed radiation to children, old people, pregnant women. Would that be the same government you're talking about?
Well, it would be the same government, but we would. I mean, the press on it would be as such so early that they wouldn't have a chance to do something like that. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if you come out and you say I'm immortal, and you go to the news stations and you say I'm immortal, and you say clock me for 100 years, NBC, and NBC clocks you for 100 years, and you don't age in 100 years, the government is not going to be able to come and just say, okay, we're going to snatch this guy up, grind him up, and see what made it that way.
I mean, you've got a point there. I mean, there's Dick Clark. They haven't ground him up yet.
Well, Dick, yeah, you may be right about Dick Clark.
He
could be immortal.
Well, he could be. Thank you very much for the call. And, you know, I think that they say his program is coming back, isn't it? Again? I used to live outside Philadelphia in a place called Media, Pennsylvania, and so I saw Bandstand from its very inception. We had it very early in Philadelphia. Anyway, Dick Clark, yeah, he may be an immortal. But I really do think that anybody who would really be immortal, and I'm not ruling it in or out, but if the answer is in for the sake of our discussion, I do think that any person that the government actually decided was immortal would be in little bitty petri-sized dishes before you could say the next 100 years. I'm Art Bell, and this is Coast to Coast AM.
You're listening to Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 28th, 1996. Presents Art Bell, Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 28, 1996.
From the high desert, where finally it's kind of clear out there this morning. It's been very wet here. I'm getting the full range of response to the question about the shuttle. For example, Art, who the hell cares what went wrong with the shuttle? NASA screws up again. I, as a taxpayer, have had it. I want my money back. End the space program now. It's a pathetic joke. Dan, the future teller in Eugene. Dan in Eugene, actually. Gee, Dan, that's kind of a limited attitude there, as far as I'm concerned. I think it was a neat experiment. The idea was to create power by, I guess, creating a delta in the orbit between the tethered satellite and the shuttle. And then that friction would generate, which it did for a very short time until it broke, would generate immense amounts of electrical power, making a lot of things easier in space. You've got to wonder if a version of a tethered something or another could be used for interplanetary travel. And I'm sure that's what they're thinking about when they try this experiment. You would think certainly so, wouldn't you? Though when you leave the orbit of a planet, then you don't have the dynamics necessary, perhaps. Unless Richard Hoagland is right, and you know he might be, to generate the electricity needed. It's all very interesting. Art, please call me Jim in Honolulu. This is from the NASA World Wide Web page. Notice there are gravitational forces, contact with the upper atmosphere, an electrical charge, and an admission that NASA doesn't yet know quite what they're doing. Or this, aren't the... Now, this is from the doctor that called faxed earlier, and he's probably right. Dear Art, the reaction when the tether broke was minimal due to the obviously much greater mass of the shuttle as compared to the satellite. On several orders of magnitude, as a matter of fact, no doubt the satellite experienced the brunt of the reaction. In other words, MV equals MV, or large mass times slow velocity must equal small mass times high velocity. Conservation of momentum. Sincerely, Dr. Warren, we will call him. And then, so that we get the full range of response, this. Art, we've all been duped. NASA just launched a top-secret satellite that was reported as a failed scientific experiment. A bowling ball tied to the end of a tether would have worked just as well. But the experiment was not the only objective. For a moment, the 12-mile copper wire generated electricity, so the experiment worked. The fully operational satellite is now headed into space at 100 miles an hour. It'll take years for it to re-enter the Earth's atmosphere, giving it and its operators ample time to control its top-secret mission. That's James from Gardnerville, Nevada. Well, who knows? Maybe James is right. But that's the full range of response. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. Tom in Omaha.
Yes, sir.
Have you ever had Robert Anton Wilson on the air? Or I don't even know for sure if he's alive still, but have you heard of the Illuminati trilogy? And
yes, I am a member of the Illuminati and a 99th degree Mason.
No, there's a nonfiction companion to the fiction trilogy that's a little interesting, though not real substantiated.
So I've heard of it, of course. I'm part of it. Yeah.
I was just wondering.
We rule, sir.
Okay, bye.
Okay, yep, see you later. We rule. Secretly, we are the hidden hand that does everything. See, I can admit that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Chunky in Shingletown.
Boy, you've got all kinds of echo on your line or something.
Oh, do I?
It's a little bit better now. Where are you again?
We've got a storm up here. Shingletown, California.
Shingletown, all right.
Yeah, by Redding.
Yes.
Did you get to catch Scallion tonight on TV?
I taped it. I didn't have time to watch it. What did he say?
Well, it's not so much what he said. I mean, you know, the things that he says over the air with you. But there were a lot of other prophecies that they had on the air with it, and I think it's something that's really worth watching.
Well, again, I would like to know, what did he say?
Well, just a minute. I got my notes. let me see.
When Scallion speaks...
There would be a magma displacement.
Uh-huh.
And dispersion of the Earth would be displaced. And that he saw massive earthquakes in Boston.
Boston?
Uh-huh. And Buffalo.
Buffalo, New York?
Yeah, that there would be a lot of activity.
Wow.
And then he had mentioned something about 3 days of darkness from the volcano, but that's supposed to be something that's way into the future.
Mm-hmm.
And that there would be movement from Virginia to the Bahamas.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's quite remarkable. All right, thank you very much. I've got to watch it. I know Gordon was on the third prophecy program on NBC last night. And, of course, I taped it, but didn't have time to get to it before airtime. Boston, huh? Buffalo, New York, huh? Gee, that's getting a little close to home for Scallion. He's in New Hampshire. Hmm. Well, how do you feel about that in Buffalo, huh? Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, this is Steve in Portland.
Hello, Steve.
And on about... Steve Forbes being so redundant, you know, saying the same thing over and over again.
Yes.
Well, you can blame that on Bill Gates.
Why?
He promised us the Forbes 96 upgrade, but it just hasn't arrived yet. So, and Gordon Michael, I did watch that show tonight.
Yes.
And you know how NBC, they kind of over-dramatized everything, but...
Yes.
It was sort of a laundry list of Art Bell programs, actually.
Well, cool. I'll enjoy watching it.
Yeah. And
Look, sir, there is nothing wrong with a good, healthy dose of Armageddon.
That's right.
Especially for the rain. My attitude.
And on the earthquakes coming up the coast.
Yes.
I figure about 2.5 weeks they'll be here in Portland.
That makes the two of us.
Yeah.
You know, if you watch the march, I mean, it's all pretty obvious. You don't have to be Gordon Michael Scallion to see what's going on.
That's right. But you don't have to worry because the Oregon Convention Center is built according to the latest Japanese earthquake standards. Like Kobe.
Goodbye. Now, see, he would remind me of that. Actually, that would be a fitting way to go, wouldn't it? Don't you think that would be a fitting way for me to go, doing my book signing up in Oregon? Somebody sent me my own epitaph, which I thought was pretty cool. I read it at the beginning of the program. I really should read it again. I think it's kind of cute. Are you ready? Dateline for Rump, Nevada, October of the year 2145. At least I've got a while, according to this. Beloved Ether talk show host Art Bell succumbs after all internal pig part organs fail following a brief but futile battle with an Australian rabbit kiwi swine virus and nearly 2 centuries of chain smoking. A large wake was held for Mr. Talk by his widow Ramona. Isn't it interesting that even in the future after nearly 200 years, the female still manages to outlive us? The deceased was roasted at a lovely ceremony over Mount Vesuvius, only stopping once every hour to baste the guest of honor. That's baste. The highlight being sweet and sour. Art, his few remaining unswine remains that were not consumed were promptly dipped in beautiful 24-karat gold by one of Art's longtime sponsors, the Gold Rose and Body Parts Company, for just $139.95. The lovely tear-filled event was followed by a 9.8 earthquake in Los Angeles in his honor. Guests eulogist G. Gordon Scallion and Stan Deo, even they are still alive, delivered eulogies filled with heartwarming memories of Art and predictions for his future in the afterlife. Foot-tapping music provided by Cusco and selected songs Don't Fear the Reaper in the year 2525 and Eve of Destruction were performed by the Linda M. Howe, by Linda M. Howe and her 1,200-voice alien choir. The send-off was attended by thousands of friends, fans, a myriad of aliens, a small tribe of Sasquatch, and 40 immortals. The latter group quickly changing their names and relocating to parts unknown following the ceremony due to the impending threat of a raid by rogue IRS agents after them for several thousand years of unpaid back taxes. The only incident marring the near flawless event was the issuance of a few traffic tickets to alien mourners for hovering their craft too close to a fire hydrant. Art's widow Ramona concluded that ceremony by unveiling a large memorial stone shaped like an ancient AM radio. The stone memorial was engraved with a fitting epitaph to the man who kept us up at night through so many, many years. Dear Lord, Art was all talk, but his talk was art. And then there's a little asterisk down at the bottom here in which he reminds me, you never know, it could happen. And unfortunately, I didn't retain the pages with the person's name because they certainly deserve credit one way or the other for this little epitaph. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello. Hello?
Yeah, hi, Art.
Hi, sir.
I want to tell you, I was on Monday night, I was watching this STS pulling the tether. I'm a little nervous. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
And they were just talking along, going through their process, and all of a sudden the line snapped.
Yes.
And as they went into their version of Houston, we have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
On the bottom part of the screen, a little bit to the left, and way in the distance, on a black and white TV, I saw a little white dot just kind of shoot across.
Here we go.
Well, I was wondering if somebody that had a tape of it could maybe, you know, do a review of that, look at it in slow motion. I only got to see it once, but I thought I saw it.
And, it was probably an alien archer.
Well, maybe somebody didn't like the experiment.
And same way to say something.
And there is a thing out here, a civilization called Mu.
Mu, oh yes.
You heard that yesterday.
Yes.
Well, they say it's sunk in the Channel Islands.
Uh-huh.
And up on Decker Canyon over Malibu Zuma, they have some very interesting little trails through a place called Old Boney Trail. I've been through there. I'm surprised archaeologists aren't going crazy about it. Anyways, that's true. And
the lost continent of Mu.
Well, there's some very interesting things up there that shouldn't be. And I'm surprised that more people don't know about it.
Well, all right, sir. There are things all over the world that should not be. I mean, look, the program the other night, I thought, pointed out some awfully important things. How in the world could there be dinosaurs in the Antarctic? And when they open them up, they find well-preserved tropic flowers that these dinosaurs ate. How can that be? If the Antarctic has always been the Antarctic, there shouldn't have been dinosaurs there in the first place, number one. And number two, they certainly could not have been eating flowers, because flowers can't grow in that kind of ice. So there are a lot of challenges to traditional science out there. A lot of challenges. And a lot of things that are not properly explained. I mean, there's just simply no question about that. All right, look, we're going to break for a very quick moment here, and we'll be right back. What I'm doing tonight is trying to discuss all kinds of things without discussing politics. We'll get back to it. I'll tell you, it's like I've had it right up to here with politics. I'm not particularly embracing anybody in the field right now. I consider the primaries the other day just a big reshuffle, and it's just sort of it's kind of a weak field in a lot of ways, and I've had it up to here. Now, I'll get interested again, I suppose, if the results in Georgia reshuffle it in some new way. But you know that feeling where you've had it right up to here? We'll be right back. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Charlie.
Hey.
Part of the so-called crisis, I think Bill Clinton is going to do the right thing. Personally, I think he'll go along the same lines and not take your advice, which he hasn't since he's been in office. Actually,
it's held him in good stead so far, Charlie.
Well, actually, you're 100% right. His foreign policy has not even been greatly attacked by the Republicans.
Maybe he'll send Jimmy Carter down there.
Well, I'll tell you this. Jimmy Carter has been the most active, the most successful ex-president this country's had probably this century. I can't think of one.
That actually is true, and he has been very active. He has been very successful. There's no doubting it. The only question is, what good is our Secretary of State?
Well, Warren Christopher, I think, has been a very good Secretary of State. I think he did a hell of a job getting those two countries in Bosnia together. Like one of the things that impresses me about Clinton on foreign policy is the fact that the man is very, very cautious. And I think that's something that you need in a president. Like, he's very cautious.
Well, what I want to know is, how is this cautious nature you described going to translate into the way he's going to handle the Cuban thing on the weekend?
I think he won't make a big... See, the thing is that he plays his cards close to his chest. And he doesn't,
oh, come on. No, quit hitting me with that stuff. How do you think he's going to handle it?
Well, I think he's not going to do anything militarily, and I think I think basically he'll just go with the sanctions, and he'll get some complaints. He'll get some complaints about that, but it won't be a big enough story, and I don't think you're going to get a big enough incident out of it to hurt him politically.
Well, but, if the brothers fly down there and they're shot down again, Charlie,
well, see, if they're
and the president has done nothing, then the word complaint is not going to do justice.
Yeah, but you see, if they're shot down again, then it changes into a major situation. Right now, it's not. I think if they're shot down again, then I think he would do something
military.
But,
Charlie, the word is going to be, now the president knew they were going down, and he did nothing. And, I mean, he's going to really take some pretty hard raps.
Well, first of all, I do not think that Castro is that stupid. Castro's been in office for 30 years, and you do not stay in power that long being that stupid.
Oh, come
on. I would be amazed if Castro would do something as dumb as that.
Oh,
I mean,
Charlie.
He might, but I would be amazed. Let me say quickly, the last note is, if I had to make a prediction right now, it does look like Bob Dole is going to wrap it up. And the reason I say that is Alexander appears to be becoming weaker and weaker.
Wait a minute. You'll have to see what he does in the South.
That's absolutely correct. But right now, polls indicate that South Carolina is going to go to Dole big time. If that is true, it means that Dole could be very strong in the South. He's going to do good in the New England area. I honestly think there's an opening for him. I think by April 1st, I think that'll be the day. If we're pretty sure has it wrapped up by April 1st, I think he's going to be the nominee. And my guess is that he is going to be the nominee. And the good news for the Republicans is, I don't think it's going to be a long, drawn-out battle. I think he's going to be in pretty good shape the next couple of months. So I think it's going to be a tougher campaign than what people think.
All right, Charlie, thank you. Well, it may be. It may be. And as I've said earlier, I really would like to talk to Bob Dole. And I don't mean just a typical media kind of interview, but a talk radio kind of interview. I'd like to have him sit down. No, he doesn't have to be here. It's a nice thing about radio. It doesn't make any difference. He can do it from wherever he is. But spend a little time and try to let the audience know what he's all about. Past the sound bites. Past the flashes of anger. Past a lot of what you see on TV. I would like to know what Bob Dole is all about, wouldn't you? Well, it's about news time again. We'll be right back.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time.
If I was walking in your shoes, I wouldn't worry none. While you and your friends are worried about me, I'm having lots of fun. Counting flowers on the wall.
Somewhere in Time with Art Bell continues, courtesy of Premier Networks.
Ah, the last hour cometh. The last live hour. Live all-night talk radio, because this radio station cares enough to have it on. Instead of the others that repeat endlessly, we are here, actually here right now. Flesh and blood. I have somebody named Jim on Vidian, and I brought my 17-pound cat in, showed him to Jim here a few minutes ago. Aloha, Art. Did you ever stop to think that the cursed envelope you received yesterday contained the curse of immortality? That's Dean from Kauai, the islands, where they know about these things. And the person who sent me this envelope curse should really, really be wary. Because my wife is from the islands. And my wife, well, I hate... While I might be a 99th degree Mason, what arrived in that envelope is going to go powering its way back to the sender with a lightning bolt delivered by my wife, who knows how to deliver these kinds of things. Dear Art, there have been a number of occurrences where young children have died of old age. This is really an interesting fact. And this person is correct. There have been a number of occurrences where young children have died of old age. There is a genetic foul-up in their genes, causing them to age rapidly. That's absolutely correct. This same genetic anomaly could probably mutate in the opposite direction and cause longevity. if not immortality. Signed, Jim. Jim, you're exactly right. It is the argument that I have been making right along. We know that the aging process is keyed genetically. And as you point out, the aging children are evidence of that fact. And as I've tried to point out, there seems to be an exception to nearly any rule anybody talks about on the face of the globe. There are exceptions here and there. So why not in this area? It's entirely possible. Entirely possible. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi. Hello? Goodbye. First time caller line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, my name is Jay, and I'm down here in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Well, good. Welcome to the program.
I've been trying to reach you for a while there. You know, there's been an earthquake up there in, near the North Pole on the 28th.
Yesterday?
Yeah, there was one yesterday up at the near the North Pole.
Now, I did not know that. No, I got no report on that, sir.
I got the coordinates wrote down here somewhere.
How big of an earthquake?
It was a 6.3, and I didn't quite get the location. I got it from a little hotline number call, and it was near the center, near 1.7 north.
Wow.
And 125.9 east.
That is totally bizarre.
And that was a pretty strong quake for the North Pole, and I don't know.
Call us toll-free at 1-800-618-8255.
Something pretty big there.
The word you wanted to use there was shoot.
Yeah, just a whole bunch. Sorry about that. I tell you what.
It's all right. I heard it. I took it out. Thank you.
Scallion would, if you get a hold of him, I'd like to know if he has any more predictions about maybe perhaps central Louisiana, around Louisiana, and the New Madrid fault line.
All right, sir. I'll see what I can do for you. Now, see, I hadn't heard that. That is, that's strange. Is that true? Was there an earthquake at the North Pole? That's really weird. Somebody's saying on Vidian here, there's a lot of activity in Alaska. I don't know what he means by that. A lot of activity in what? Huh. Here's another one. Art, hello there. I feel I should answer some of the questions that have arisen on tonight's show. Well, actually, one in particular. The caller was curious as to why no immortals have tried to go public. You responded with the normal response. Fear of being pulverized by modern scientists. In many respects, you are correct. However, there are many other reasons. Many immortals have attempted to go public, but they're never believed. You can pick up their story in many tabloids. Usually, that's as far as it goes. When they do attempt to go public, the word does get out internationally. There are many Oriental recipes that call for immortal bone dust. You see, I knew that. This poses an even greater threat than Western science. Usually, by the time one gets old, the desire for people who know who you are gets pushed aside in favor of rationality. Besides, it's more fun if people don't know. Another factor. Some of those who are immortal are that way because of magic. Telling will dispel the magic. This is not a good thing, trust me. It's not a good thing at all. I mentioned immortal cats. I mentioned them in my previous facts, and as you heard tonight, they are definitely around. I've known immortal bears before, and even an immortal dog. But cats are much more common. Why? Only God knows. That's a serious fact. There are people very seriously involved in this and who very seriously believe or claim to be immortal. Quite a number of them. It's an amazing topic. I don't know where it came from. I don't know how it got on the show. But here we are once again. West of the Rocky. First time callers. Area 702-727-1222. I had to take it out. Dan, let's start all over again fresh. Your first name is Dan, without your last name. And where are you calling from?
Tacoma, Washington.
All right.
Yeah, your program is pretty good. I've been listening to you for a couple of years now, and this is my night off, so I decided I'd call you.
Ah!
Great, huh? I think all these immortals are kooks.
Maybe.
Yeah, well.
That's probably what they want you to think.
I think they'd reveal themselves if they really were.
No, they wouldn't.
Yeah. Oh, well. As far as this presidential stuff, I know you don't want to hear it, but I really want Buchanan to win. I know he's a little radical, but I think we need something a little on the radical side to get the country back on an even keel. What do you think?
Well, I have areas of disagreement with Pat.
Yeah, well, so do I, but, you know, I think maybe try to get it back in the center. I think it's a little too far left right now. But, anyway.
I've got to be honest. I'm not really behind any of the candidates to speak of. I'm not really happy with the present field at all, and I wish there would be somebody else.
Yeah, like Harry Brown, maybe?
No. I have more disagreements with Harry than I do Pat.
Oh, my.
No, I'm not a radical, sir.
Huh.
On the other hand, I went for Ross Perot because of the same reason that you're going for Pat. I thought Ross would go to the White House and shake them all up, and it'd be a good thing.
Yeah.
But I'm not, somehow, for me, thank you very much, as a Ross Perot supporter at one time, I don't translate that support to Pat Buchanan. I don't know why, because Buchanan was supposed to pick up a lot of support from Perot people. And I was, at one time, a Perot person. God, I thrashed it out. That killed me. That election killed me. In more ways than one. I thought about that every night for the longest time and agonized over how I was going to vote. And I'm sure it'll come to that again, but, you know, there's a lot of time between now and Election Day. And I don't know about you, but I can't stand the possibility of being able to talk about nothing else between now and Election Day, and I'm not going to let it happen. So, like tonight, it's like I had it right up to here with politics, and all of a sudden I needed a break. And I may again tomorrow night. Maybe even the next night. I don't know. Well, the next night I'll be off. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Good morning, Art.
Good morning to you.
This is Reggie. I'm calling from the San Francisco Bay Area.
Yes, sir.
I got in a phone call during the last 10 minutes of the last program that Dr. Bagage was on.
Yes.
And after the program was over, I went ahead and started reading a book that I started reading just a few hours before that.
What book is that, sir?
It's called Time, Space, and the Mind.
Okay.
And the reason I ask is right before, I believe that sometime during that particular program, Dr. Bagage mentioned that he wanted to go into the application of lasers and acupuncture points.
Yes.
Okay. This book is written by Dr. Irving Oil.
Yes.
Would you by chance be mentioned on page 123?
Would I be mentioned?
Correct.
Why? What does he mention?
It has a very short conversation, if I can quote.
Go ahead.
It says, "Hi." This is quoting from the book. The telephone interrupts my reverie. "Hi," it says. "My name is Art." The voice states it belongs to a journalist reporter. It does a nightly radio show. We reach the entire western United States. He read Mrs. Pix's article in the Chronicle. I'd like to talk to you about it on the air. Since I don't feel like much like driving to San Francisco for a broadcast, which runs from 8 p.m. to midnight, and it goes on. But it does sound like you.
It does, huh?
Yes, it does.
But I never broadcast from 8 to midnight.
Uh-huh. Well, this was written, let me check, I believe in 1976 or thereabouts. Copyright 1976 by Celestial Arts.
Well, let me think about that. I don't think it's me. You're right. It certainly sounds like me. Now, let's see. I'm going to have to think about the dates a little bit. Heard in the Bay Area then, possibly. 76. It could have been. It could have been. I'm going to have to do some reminiscing about dates. I'm really lousy on dates. But it is just barely possible, actually. East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, good morning, Art. This is Wally from WODT, Who Dat, New Orleans.
Oh, New Orleans. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. I just want to ask you a question. Twice you referred to, matter of fact, several times you referred to yourself as a Mason.
99th degree,
yes. Right. Uh-huh. So you are a traveling man. Let me ask you this. Also, you said something about you were into this Illuminatis.
Oh, yes.
Could you explain to me what that is? I'm not familiar with that.
No, I can't.
You can't?
No.
Okay. Well,
of course,
I appreciate
not.
It,
I mean,
Art.
Something that secret, you know. You want to see me turned into dust?
No, we already had Ash Wednesday last week.
That's right. You did.
We sure did.
So you need me here on the radio. You don't need me as dust.
Yeah, you're right about that.
All right. There you are. Nor can I explain my CIA involvement. Nor can I explain my Council on Foreign Relations involvement or any of the rest of it, for obvious reasons. You all know that I'm right about that. You know what would happen if I talked about it. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, Mr. Bell. I'm calling from South Dakota. How are you this morning?
I'm very well. Welcome. Where in South Dakota, pray tell, would you be?
Beautiful downtown Black Hills.
Black Hills?
Yeah, you know, Mount Rushmore and all the National Shrine and all that.
Oh, yes, indeed. And a place of recent voting for Bob Dole.
Unfortunately. At any rate, did you get a good answer on the boys that flew down into Cuba and got shot down and the legalities of their flight plan?
Well, I think I know they filed a flight plan for elsewhere and then flew down to below the 24th parallel, but still apparently outside of the 12-mile claimed limit of Cuba, right?
That's correct, but as I understand, it was a warning area.
Now, that's not really legitimate. Warning area is one thing.
Yes, but...
It's not a shoot-down area.
Oh, no. But what I was going to say was, if they took a flight plan from point A to point A and round-robin into the warning area,
yeah.
As long as they have the controlling facilities approval, that's okay. Now, if they went from... I'm sure they didn't, sir. Oh, they didn't?
If they went from point
A to point B with a VFR flight plan,
yeah.
They could go through there, but they should only have their hands slapped.
Mm-hmm.
Because a warning area is used, it's either hot or cold. And if the governing facility, which is the United States, which more than likely it was,
yeah.
And if it was cold and they went through there,
yeah.
VFR, they shouldn't have any problem.
Well, I think they're going back Saturday. Whatever technicalities you want to talk about, they're going back Saturday. So the question is, what do we do? I mean, are we going to send up some planes and protect them? Or are we going to allow them to be shot down? Or are we going to keep them on the ground? What do we do?
Yeah, they have every right to fly as anyone else. And knowing that the Navy has quite a few vessels down there coming out of Gitmo.
Yep.
Well,
the big question is, and it's going to be a tough decision in Washington, you either protect them or you let them fly and get shot down. I'll tell you, if they get shot down and the U.S. does nothing, Mr. Clinton will not be able to be elected dog catcher in Florida. And that's no joke.
Well, Bill Lobozo shouldn't have been elected in the first place.
Well, look, it's no easy decision.
That's true.
I'm not real happy with this president either, but that's a tough decision, and I think he's got to put planes in the air.
I agree.
And you know what?
And as far as
I... Let me tell you, if the MiGs come out to play, and we shoot a couple of them down, the man you referred to as Bozo, his stock is going to go up about 20%.
Yes, unfortunately.
Have a good morning.
You too, sir.
I mean, that's just the truth. That's the way things work, and you all know it. The first-time caller line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Yes.
This is Doug in Woodburn.
Hi, Doug.
How you doing tonight?
Well, you're listening.
Yeah. I just want to let you know I enjoy your program.
Thank you.
And I've been listening now for about a year. It's the first time I've called. know some friends and I at work have sent you some email.
I get a lot of email.
Well, we sent you kind of a silly one about the Leaning Tower of Pisa here about...
I remember that one. I get a lot of silly email.
Yeah. that was one of my thoughts. But I want to let you know that. I hope I get a chance to come up and see you in Portland,
Portland
there.
Could you make it? You think you could make... How far is it from Woodland to Portland?
Woodburn.
Woodburn.
We're about 30 miles south.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad. You could do that.
Yeah.
Well, I will be there. Saggy-eyed a little bit because I will have been up all night, but I'm going to be there.
Yeah.
Signing away.
Yeah, that's great.
All right.
Well,
I'll look forward to it. Come to Portland and see me March 16th, 12 noon. Thank you. East of the Rockies, you're on the air, top of the morning.
Hello.
Hello.
This is RJ calling from St. Louis.
All right, RJ, KSD country, yes.
Yeah. Earlier you said that you was 99th degree Mason.
99th, yes. Are you on a speakerphone?
No.
Okay. Yeah, 99th degree. That's right.
That means you've got something in common with Dole.
No, he's not 99th.
He's 33rd, I think.
That's right. I'm 66 degrees above Dole.
So you...
So don't mess with me.
You said the Illuminati rule. That's not the case.
And,
rules.
Well, there's the Council on Foreign Relations, and they rule, too.
Well, yeah.
I wasn't referring to off-Earth, sir.
What were you referring to?
The hidden hand that we rule with here on Earth, of course.
Yeah, that's true. But someday the Lord will come back and...
Well, then he'll rule. Until then, 99th degree Masons, look out.
This is true.
Mm-hmm.
How long have you been in the Masons?
I was born in the Masons, sir.
Huh?
That's right.
Born in the Masons.
Genetic. That's the only way you get to the 99th degree. You don't think you achieve that one lifetime, do you? See, there's a lot of things about the higher levels that you don't understand.
Right.
And I can't really go into it.
Right.
It's all secret. Okay?
Gotcha.
All right, sir. Thank you for the call. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Oh, hi, Art. This is Ann from Eugene, Oregon.
Hello, Ann.
How you doing?
Okay.
Good. Gee, I'm glad I got to catch you. I lost you last night.
You lost me?
Yeah. Hmm. KPNW got a transformer knocked over by our snowstorm.
Oh, yes.
So we lost you.
Well, I'm glad they got it repaired.
Oh, me too. I couldn't have two nights without listening to you.
That's very kind. Thank you.
Oh, so good to have you on our way on coast to coast here in Eugene. That's wonderful. We've had some strange weather here.
Ma'am, there has been strange weather here. It was snowing. There's been strange weather everywhere.
Yeah, you even got some, didn't you?
Oh, absolutely.
Snow and everything.
Oh, look, it's a weird year, and it's leading up to something. Look, I've got a break. Do you want to hold on?
Oh, sure.
All right. Sure. It's getting strange out there, and I'll bet you this coming hurricane season is yet bigger than the last one. Anybody want to take bets on that? And you say nothing's happening?
Of course it is.
This is Premier Networks. That was Art Bell hosting Coast to Coast AM on this Somewhere in Time. Somewhere in Time. Tonight featuring Coast to Coast AM from February 28th, 1996.
This is from Mexico. Hello, Mr. Bell. Raul from Tijuana. You've got a great show. I know why NASA lost their satellite. It's because someone forgot to tie down the cable to the rail on the shuttle. Kind of like losing a kite. That's why NASA says they don't know what could have happened. If I'm wrong, maybe some alien was playing target practice with a cable. Did you know there have been some small quakes near Ensenada and Mexicali? Remember the thermal vents? Something is going on. Yes, Raul, I know. I know. There is something going on. Something is coming north, Raul. On up through Mexico. It's coming this way. Something big and something shaky. You don't have to be Gordon Michael Scallion to read the map and watch the march. West of the Rockies, you're back on the air again. Thank you for waiting.
Oh, well, thank you, Art, for letting me stay on.
You bet.
I watched the broadcast tonight of the prophecy thing.
Oh, yes. And I have it on tape. I'm going to watch it later.
Oh, good. It's pretty good. I missed the first part of it because I had it on the wrong station or on the wrong channel. Of course, naturally, if there's something I want to watch, I've always got it someplace else.
Well, they usually hold the best for last, so I doubt you miss much.
I was glad to see Scallion on there. That was great. I was wondering what he looked like. It was nice.
Does he look like you imagine him to be?
Basically, yeah. Mm-hmm. Pretty basically.
Does he have a pretty cool prophet look to him?
Looks like a pretty ordinary man to me. What do I know?
Well, I think the outside is not what counts for a prophet. It's inside.
No, it's what's inside. There was a mammoth found years back, I remember, and it had still had flowers in its mouth.
That's right.
Along, you know, so it's not what they just found recently isn't any surprise, you know. I've been reading this kind of stuff for years.
Yes, and of course, once, thank you very much, the desert was covered with water. Mountains have been found to have once been underwater. The Antarctic once was tropical. I mean, all of these things should be gentle hints to us that things in the past have perhaps altered dramatically. Here's somebody who says that I should be using Won't Get Fooled Again by The Who. And they're probably right. If somebody wants to send me Won't Get Fooled Again by The Who, I'll use it. The other ones that I would like to have, the other pieces of bumper music, In the Year 2525 by Zegarin Evans. I'd like to have that one. And there are a couple of others, but Won't Get Fooled Again would be really good for the year of politics. Think of the words. And I'll get on my knees and pray we don't get fooled again, meet the new boss, same as the old boss, Jim in L.A. Even made all that rhyme. That's true. It is true, isn't it? That would work very well. Somebody send me a copy of Won't Get Fooled Again by The Who, which was a great tune anyway, and I'll use it. What else would be good? In the year 2525, that'd be great. Zegarin Evans. Gotta remember, I've got a long rock and roll history behind me, and so a lot of these things appeal to me, and a lot of them make sense, too. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, bus driver Dave up here in Seattle.
Hello there. What's going on?
Oh, not a heck of a lot. I was listening to all this conspiracy stuff on masonry here tonight, and I've been a mason for 25 years.
Bet you're not 99th degree, though.
No, just 32nd. Uh-huh. And what gets me, Art, is people don't stop to think our founding fathers that wrote up the Constitution, most of them were masons.
That's right.
And the ones at the Boston Tea Party, they officially closed the meeting 20 years ago because they couldn't get back to their lodge in time to close the meeting. And people won't stop to think. Shriners are masons. They have children's burn hospitals. The Scottish Rite, your 4th through 32nd degree Masons. They sponsor speech clinics for kids who...
You're absolutely correct. I mean, they do. Thank you very much, Bus Driver Dave. They do all kinds of good things. But you see, you cannot tell the people who think that the Masons have a very secret sub-agenda that is covered up by the apparent good works that they do. And so I have given up trying. I don't fight that fight anymore. If you want to think that there's a great conspiracy involving the Masons, then fine. Go right ahead. Nothing I say is going to change your mind anyway. People used to call me up all the time and tell me that I'm a CIA agent. So I said, what the hell? And I gave up arguing against it. I just told them, yeah, I am. Kind of stops them cold. I mean, what are they going to say? Really? They usually say, really, are you? And they buy it. It's just like the guy who called earlier. You're really a 99th degree Mason? Well, yes, I am. Wow. Well, tell me about it. Well, I can't. Of course, you know I can't. They always sort of go, yeah, of course, I do understand. Thank you. And they go away. Happy. In their belief. So, who am I to argue otherwise? East of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, that was west of the Rockies, right?
No, east.
Oh, man, I'm in Nevada.
Well, you're calling way the wrong number.
Oh.
Well, listen on the air, and I'll give you the number. If you're west of the Rockies, your number is 1-800-825-5030. Whoops. See, now you've got me doing it. If you're west of the Rockies, it's 1-800-618-8255. East of the Rockies is 1-800-825-5033. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Hi, Art. This is Rich from San Jose.
How you doing?
Hi. I just thought there was an article in my paper today that I thought you'd be really interested in.
Okay.
It's a small article, but the title says, Pig Epidemic Strikes in Remote Indonesia.
Pig epidemic.
Yeah, it says a respiratory disease may be spread by pigs has killed 177 people in a remote region of New Guinea.
You're kidding.
Yeah, and it's just funny because you're talking about, you know, the pig parts, and here's one of those little stories.
You mean my eulogy here?
Yeah, that came up. And the National Health Department denies there's an epidemic. They claim the deaths have took place over 3 years, but the chief of the county says they've happened in the past 2 months. So
well, that's a lot of people to die. I mean, unless there was a pig stampede or something.
Yeah, so it's a little, I guess, a little misinformation. And I just saw the article and I was like, I'm sure you must be interested in this.
I am interested in
yeah.
it. A pig respiratory ailment that has apparently been transferred and killed how many again?
177.
That's a lot of people.
Yeah, they say it causes difficulty in breathing, followed by coughing up blood and then death.
Great.
Yeah, so I just a little... thing I thought you'd like to know about.
All right. Well, I'll sleep tighter now, sir. Thank you very much.
Just don't get any of those, you know, pig parts, you know, going to you.
Bye. Oh, that sounds pleasant. Difficulty breathing, coughing up blood, and then a terrible twitching death. Great. There are a lot more viruses and things that are going on right now, and it keeps coming up. And people keep asking me, is something going on? Obviously it is. Obviously more things are occurring at a faster pace. And I simply choose to call it the quickening. It is one word that covers all. This kind of thing. Crazy, huh? West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Well, I gotta tell you, how you doing, Art?
I'm doing quite well.
Where is the justice in this world? I've been trying since 1:30, and some guy gets in and has the wrong number.
Yeah. You've been trying since 1:30?
Mountain time.
Mountain time, all right.
I took a break at 4 o'clock. And then,
I see.
Okay, three questions, I think. I'm doing a research paper on the effects of Tucker. Oh, by the way, this is Michael. I'm calling from Nuttall Hall at Snow College in a little place called Ephraim, Utah. I was listening to you on KOB and switched over to KVEG when they...
Yeah, I guess New Mexico comes really crashing into Utah, doesn't it?
Oh, man, I get it. So, you know, except when it's not fading out, it sounds like a local station here at night.
Anyway, if you have three questions, we should...
Okay, on my research paper, I'm doing it on talk radio and the effects of talk radio on Americans' lives and kind of how it saved AM radio. I was wondering if there's any sites on the email or internet, like, I don't know if there's anything on your web page or anything that...
Nothing that specifically addresses that, but it is a very interesting topic, and I would like to get a copy of your paper when you're done. Talk radio has indeed saved AM radio. There is no question about it. But if talk radio, and this is my little philosophy about it, if talk radio wants to remain on top,
yeah,
it is going to have to diversify, and everybody is going to have to stop marching down the same trail that Rush Limbaugh has gone. And if they don't do that, it's not going to be on top very much longer.
Well, you'd be the one to do it.
Well, that's my philosophy. Anyway, so there you are.
Okay.
That's one.
Another question.
Yes. Now, this would be two.
Yes. On your book,
yes.
The audio version?
Yes, sir.
I heard you mention a long time ago that it had to be abridged.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
well, it's abridged from the full version of the book, but it's still 4.5 hours long. And there's a lot of things that I put into the audio book that I didn't put into the regular book, simply because I got off on tangents.
Oh, so you didn't just sit and read it?
No.
Oh,
well,
okay.
Hell no. How could I do that?
Okay, I'm just wondering, because I'm totally blind, and I've just was wondering.
I mean, I did a lot of that, don't get me wrong. But then I kind of branched out, too. It was inevitable.
So I may want somebody to read me the regular book also.
Well, I would say you'll get things in the audiobook that the people with the real book didn't get at all. In other words, audio clips that I used and different stuff that obviously could not be put into a book.
Right.
So both are worth it independently, actually.
Great.
Okay.
And lastly, do you have any order that you answer your lines? Because I'm sure they're all just constantly ringing.
They are. And
you just kind of do them at random.
Well, actually, what we try to do is answer the one that has been ringing the longest.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
I tried to figure out the fair way to do it, and they cycle, you know. And after you've been ringing for a while, as you well know, you get cut off.
Right. In fact, earlier tonight, you answered, you know, I've been trying just here on the West of the Rockies line, and you answered, I think, just as I was cut off, because you're like, West of the Rockies, hello, hello.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm like, I was there.
I know. I've got to run, sir. Thank you. That is correct. It happens a lot. And it happens because we're doing on-screen calls. So a lot of times, just as that unfortunate moment comes when you get cut off, I go to the line. And nobody's there. It's a risk you run, but it's no big deal. Wildcard line, you're on the air. Hi.
Hello, Art. Central Scrutinizer, Anchorage, Alaska.
Yes, sir.
I talked to you earlier, I wrote a message for earlier, seeing you on Vidian. That's a great concept and great idea. Everyone should have one in every home.
Tell everybody. I mean, Vidian, you're right. I remember you called on Vidian, and you saw me. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and the first time it was after 4, and you wrote you had to go to breakfast, and I had seen your cat in the background on your shoulder. And,
yeah, my cat's right on my shoulder. It's pretty weird.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. But you know, I wanted to talk about this race thing. I'm 26 years old, and I'm watching this presidential thing myself because I'm looking at the president that's going to lead us into the year 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you want to get into quickening and stuff like that, I you know, we're talking about the guy who's going to lead us into Nostradamus times.
You know, yes.
A lot of people look at all these type of, you know, things like the Bible and all these predictions, and if you look at what he predicted, we're coming close to that time.
We are, certainly. And if you consider that we really are moving into the area of Nostradamus' predictions for the final brouhaha, then you know who might really be perfect to lead us there?
Buchanan?
No. No, Buchanan always tells the truth. You know, even if you don't like it or don't agree with it, the guy levels with you.
Well,
the guy you'd really want to lead you into the end times would be Bill Clinton.
Oh,
because he'd be telling you everything's cool, everything's all
right.
Don't worry about it.
Oh, that guy scares me.
I feel your pain. Yeah, see the comment up there? I feel your pain. He'd usher it right in.
Yeah. Well, you know, I like Buchanan's ideas with, you know, with getting a hold on some of the, you know, like slapping tariffs down. I don't like the ideas of ending all trade, but I like the ideas of more stricter tariffs towards, like, Japan. I like the ideas
but
of
he takes
the wall.
It, yes, sir, but he takes it too far.
Right.
He takes it too far. I've really got to run. I'm terribly sorry, but he takes it too far. We need targeted tariffs in order to cause other people to take theirs down. His 5-year idea about a moratorium on immigration, legal immigration for 5 years, is, in my opinion, somewhat mean-spirited and not needed. We need to do something about illegal immigration. Not legal immigration. The legal quotas that we have are quite reasonable. And we don't need to end that. That's not hurting us. Millions of people coming in illegally, now that is hurting us. The idea of the wall, a bit extreme, but if that's what it takes, then I'm all for it. We have every right to control our border. So, you know, there are areas of agreement I have with Pat, and areas of definite disagreement. And I would like to hear his argument justifying a 5-year moratorium on legal immigration. I think that's kind of a red herring. It's going too far. First time caller line, you're on the air.
This is Bob.
Hello, Bob.
Yeah?
Turn your radio. Bob.
Is this Art?
Bob, turn your radio off.
Oh, just a minute.
Yeah, all right.
Okay. Yeah, this is Pete from Maryville, Washington.
Well, hello, Pete.
Yeah, I'm going to get away from the presidents for this time and go to some of the legislators.
What president, Pete?
Well, I mean, they've been talking about these presidents.
Not me. I've been staying all away from it this morning.
How's that?
I've been staying away from it. I'm tired of it.
Yeah, I know. Well, this is more or less something that's been bothering me for a long time, that these legislators, when they get elected, you'd think that, you know, the way they should have a little knowledge as to what they're getting into and that they...
Well, they do.
They should be able to think for themselves.
They can, and that's why they're in the game. They know that if they get elected, they get power. If they get power, they get money. If they get power, they get influence, and then they get money. People want things done, and those people come to them and give them money. They know what they're doing. It's no great mystery. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Buck down in WODT country.
Down in New Orleans. Yes, sir.
Yes, Art.
Yes.
This guy Wiley had me kind of... puzzle here. Is Illuminati, are they devil worshippers?
Sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right, thanks. Can I say one more thing?
Sure.
Good night, America.
Okay, well. You know, Illuminati's like everybody else. They put the pants on one leg at a time. As is the case with 99th degree Masons and CIA guys and the whole bunch. Just people. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Mr. Bell. How are you doing?
Okay.
This is Sig in Seattle.
Yes, Sig in Seattle.
I'm wearing a 33-degree Mason ring on my chain on my neck that was my grandfather's.
Uh-huh.
And my question to you is, I don't know if you're joking or not. There isn't really a 99th degree, is there?
Of course there is.
Are you joking, aren't you?
Why do you think that?
I don't know. My dad always...
As a 33-degree Mason, 33rd degree Mason, your dad,
Grandpa.
Of course he's not around to be able to tell you anymore.
Right.
But he would have had knowledge, not specific knowledge, but a kind of a general knowledge about those of us who are in these categories.
The upper echelon.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much.
That's it?
That's it. I'm still confused.
That's we depend on that. Confusion. Without that factor, without confusion, we wouldn't be able to do the things we do as 99th Degree Masons. First time caller line, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Is this Art Bell?
It is Art Bell, but you know what?
What?
The program's ending. Where are you?
I'm in Nashville, Tennessee.
All the way in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yes.
Well, you and WTN in Nashville, the mighty WTN, are going to get the honors tonight. Do you know what that is?
Yes, I do.
Boy, what a nice southern accent you have. All right, lay it on them.
Okay, good night, America.
Wasn't that nice? Southern women. Well, that's it. We're out of time. From the high desert, good night, America.